Welcome to In The Stiffs podcast with me, Sam Easton. I'm joined by my friends and former Shrewsbury teammates, Gavin Cowan and Dave Edwards.
Big thank you to our sponsors, the brilliant Budgeon Motors, kindly sponsoring us in this third series, a family-owned business of 40 years with exceptional customer service. Loads of competitive deals on new and used cars. Get yourselves down there.
Right, welcome everybody to In The Stiffs. We've got a very special guest today, 45-year-old former centre-forward, 540 appearances for 21 different clubs, 116 goals in 17 years, ex-pro footballer who is a recovering addict, an individuals coach who's on a mission to support individuals in business and sport, and who states that the number one obstacle to success in business and sport is fear. He runs advanced emotional intelligence courses currently, working with a load of CEOs, footballers, golfers, etc. He's also a high-performance coach at Southampton. Welcome, the fear coach, a.k.a. Drew Broughton. Welcome. Well, that was good. That was a good introduction, wasn't it? Yeah, that was all right.
You've done well.
Take there, a breath there, son.
Yeah. That's it. Anyway, that's a script going right. Let's crack on then.
Drew, obviously we've just spoken off air quite a lot there, so we've got to try and cram all that back in. But just want to go right to the beginning, really, starting with your at the start of your life. We've heard you speak about in your videos about having like a regular childhood. Father left early. Just give us a bit of a rundown on how all that got going.
Yeah, because the more you look into all this stuff, you think, well, the best performers seem to have been from third world countries where you're scrapping every day just to have dinner. And I never had that. But looking back, we didn't have an abundance of money. One pair of football boots, couldn't afford much more. Mum worked two jobs, but I think she had an incredible work ethic, raised three boys by herself. And I look now and I think, well, I had my career and I've got mine. My younger brother sold his company at 28 for millions, lives in America. My older brother's director of football at Blackburn. Like, she did really well. And I think what she gave us was an incredible work ethic. She was relentless. But in my childhood, my mum had to play the role of mother and father. So I guess the maternal instinct, she probably had to be the father at times, which is
strict.
Yeah, get back out there. There's no tears here. You've got to go again.
Yeah.
Which has been amazing. I'm fully for that. But yeah, regular childhood, that's all I can say. Dad wasn't around, but that's a lot of people. But I realised in myself, nurture is only one part. There's a nature in me that was what I am, which is very sensitive, very emotional, huge moral compass. But I'm also in the same body. I'm a winner and I'm very driven. So trying to manage all that as a young child is very difficult.
Which I suppose 20, 25 years ago in the midst of your playing career or whatever it was, it's hard to actually say that as opposed to now.
I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when people say know who you are. Like, I know who I am today. I probably knew who I was 34, 35 after rehab. That was a grounding to like, who are you? And who I am, I can look people in the eye and said, well, I'm very, very intense, very driven, very moral, huge moral compass, and very emotional. That's who I am. The rest of it, I don't know.
And going back to the start of your life, obviously, we talk about, you know, you get what you deserve, you know, your rewards. You got, was it a scholarship into a private school? So,
yeah, but well, my mum was worried. You know, I was misbehaving a little bit at regular school and at 9, 10. And she said, well, if I can get you into a boys' school where the sports facilities are really good, but they won't entertain, it's stricter, probably because you're paying, there's more teachers, there's more discipline.
Yeah.
I think, and she always says, that's what I paid for. I didn't pay for the education. I wasn't bothered about that. It was, you need some strictness and some guidance.
Yeah.
So I managed to get a scholarship into Bedford School, not far from here, which was brilliant because of that. But it was always also difficult because when I joined Norwich, I was at Norwich at 9 and 10, so I'm going on all these trips and with the kids and I'm from boys' school and Bellas and stuff from Council Estates in Cardiff. And so as I got into my youth years, it was difficult going into football at the weekends with kids from all over the country, Council Estates, and there's me from boys' school, went to Saturday morning school playing rugby. And so that was difficult. It was a shame around that for me as well.
So good at football, so that would have helped, obviously, in terms of your social side.
Yeah.
And the academic side, and obviously...
I was average. I got my GCSEs, but C's and B's.
Yeah.
It was a good experience.
What you said there. You felt like it was a bit of a shame.
I felt ashamed, yeah, at times, because you know, football's a working-class game. And you know, you'd join up with Norwich at the weekend, and like I say, you'd have the Welsh guys from the tough states, you'd have the lads, because that was when there was no catchment areas, of course. Yeah. The guys from South London, you've got lads from nothing in Manchester. Yeah. You're all getting together in this team,
You felt like a little posh boy.
Well, exactly. I felt like a little posh boy. That's exactly it. But what was so confusing to me, I was also the alpha leader. And I was also could really get on. Like, I look at Craig Bellamy, and Bellas and I were at Norwich from the age of 9. We still speak now. Huge similarities in who we are, yet absolutely gulfs apart in who we are. And what I've similarities is just the winner.
Yeah,
I was a winner. He was a winner. High standards. Couldn't accept losing. Wanted to be the best. But everything else was so different. And I was ashamed. I couldn't identify that as the winner because I can't, because I'm from private school. I can't be the same as. So you're constantly. It was a real battle, that, for me.
With Craig Bellamy, I've been lucky enough to play with Bellas, and I spoke to you.
Were you lucky enough? You said he was like, going to
I'll always say he was very, very difficult to play with because what you say, and his standards. And as a footballer, he at the time was playing for Man City, Blackburn, Newcastle, Liverpool, all these top teams, and he was playing with the likes of Gerrard every day. And then I rock up, and I'm not passing the ball into him like Gerrard's passing, so he's going to have a go at you, but I didn't mind because even though he'd have a go at me, he would still work the hardest and he still wanted to win more than anyone else. Before training, he would always be in the gym doing his stuff for his knees and things like that. Yeah. He was born winner.
He was a born winner. And look, Bella's by his own admission, without sharing too much. He's done a lot of, I saw a podcast the other day he did on the overlap. He's a lot more honest about his emotions today. Yeah. And if you asked him, he's a coach, of course, now with Vincent Kompany, but is there a way of still being the winner and communicating slightly better when you haven't wrapped the pass in? There is.
Yeah.
But that's taken a while to get to that place.
Did he find him intimidating then, Dave?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, he's intimidating. Yeah, would you go into a shell then because of that?
No. You see some people do.
So then there would be times. He's not helping the team then, is he? But no. He's not bothered. He's just, like, if he's a captain of a team, has he not got a responsibility to help those other players?
And I think
when
Bellas did, that he was part of like the uprising of what's happened with Wales. He was part of that under Gary Speed. Then when Bellas went, I think a lot of other younger players probably took more responsibility. And I think it probably helped them a little bit. But there's no getting away from how good he was.
But you know what's so hard? And this is, so the similarity that we had, which we are both, I was that same person. I really was. We made our debuts on the day, same day together at Crystal Palace because we were prolific all through the youth ranks as a front pair. If you go 2 years on from my debut, I'm struggling at Peterborough in League Two. He moves to Newcastle for $6 million. Mm. So you go, what is that? Technique, talent? Well, no, he's short and quick. I'm big and strong. He scores goals. I score goals. Our goal scoring record was exactly the same all the way up, pretty much. Yeah. He was able to block out those emotions of fear and overthinking and just go and perform. They drowned me at 18.
Yeah.
So at that turning point, one goes there, one goes there. But everything else is the same.
Is he lacking? Is it lacking some kind of intelligence from him, which in a good way, that you're not overthinking?
Well, look,
it's
said, isn't it, that ignorance is bliss?
Yeah.
But Bellas is highly intelligent. People think he's not intelligent. He's very, very smart when it comes to life. He's streetwise off the scale.
Yeah.
Understands the game unbelievably.
Is it a level of arrogance then, Drew?
Not arrogance. I think, look, again.
Again, good arrogance, you know. We see it in a lot of players.
Yeah, because we've got to be careful with words, because I'm not, because arrogance is just a reaction to fear. I think. I am very, very sensitive and very emotional, and it's not intelligent because I wasn't smart at school. I think that there's an ability, probably who I am, more sensitive, more emotional, more feeling, and I wasn't able to go, which is what I teach today, and I think you can do it in a healthy way, but no one taught me. I wasn't able, I call it healthy disrespect. I wasn't able to, like he did, to be able to go, well, fuck everyone. Mm. I'm doing me. I think coming from the streets where he came from, fast forwards that, which is why the movement of players from South London is huge, because those lads from the cage of South London, Sancho's one. Yeah. When you come from the streets, it's the streets. You're not safe. Eye for an eye, drug pushers. You get wise quick and you get ruthless quick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't come from a middle class, pretty much background, not a lot of money, but I wasn't chucked in the truth of the streets.
Yeah.
When you come from that, it's why the African players are so good. Oftentimes don't buy into it all. Mm. I can imagine coming from Africa, and I've had African clients. Look, let's get real here. If you're coming from Lagos and you grew up there, you understand life. You ain't going to come into an academy and start handing over your respect to coaches or the pressure of the game. You think, fuck off. So I think there's something in all of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you feel, but this is what broke me, because the personality is exactly the same. You don't want it as much as him. Well yeah, I do.
So you started to struggle at Norwich and mentally, whereas Bellas has kicked on and you.
I mean, I don't want to be about Bellas, but he was a good example of that. Yeah. I think I always was as a kid sensitive. I'm a sensitive guy. I feel stuff.
And that didn't count it against you at Norwich. And that's
it counts
against,
well, in life. If you feel stuff, then it means you feel stuff. So that means I in Lion King, when Simba's dad dies, Mustafa, I still cry today because I feel a father dying in front of his son. I feel that. As a kid, but you don't know any of that. You're just trying to manage all your emotions growing up, and then you're into a game which is highly emotional. Football is highly emotional. You take in there your personality of a winner, which nothing's ever enough for me. That's the addict, like, more, 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 and feeling everything. I mean, it's a cocktail of...
Yeah.
But actually, the more top players you realise, you think, wow, I actually had the cocktail that top players have. Feel everything, because that's creativity.
Yeah,
feeling is creative, and the drive of the best. So, but couldn't manage any of that. And we'll go into some tools and how and why. And
so going right back to the start.
Yeah,
you're talking about being sensitive, and I was just, as you were talking there, I was just thinking about my situation with my kids and about discipline and nurture between me and my wife. Do you think the absence of your dad was it six?
Six, yeah.
Sorry to go so deep.
No, it's nice. That's all deep.
Do you think the absence of your dad then probably played a part in that subconsciously, like when you're in that theta stage when you're really, really young?
Yeah, I would say to a point, yes, you can't ignore that. But I've done so much therapy and stuff over the years that there came a point at 30. I remember it vividly, and I use this story a lot. I was 35. It was 2 years after Sporting Chance, 2 years after my career finishing. Done a load of therapy, done two 12-step programs, done all this stuff. And I remember being out on my road. I bought one of those road bikes to keep the fitness going. And I was not full Lycra, by the way. I couldn't do the full Lycra. Just a baggy t-shirt. I had the padded shorts because of your ass. But I was
your
out
bum would look
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your bum would look all right.
And I got, it was like 5:30 in the morning, summer's morning. I got to the top of the road and I was fiddling around. Got those clip-in things. I was fiddling around with those. And these two cyclists go past at the end of the road. And I remember looking up and they were a decent speeder. And his voice went, hunt them down, track them and humiliate them. Now, because I was self-aware, I just watched that voice and I started smiling to myself, said, I don't need to do that. Now, I'd healed all the dad stuff. So what is that? That's the winner. So now, that's the winner. That's a gift. I don't think those guys probably got on the bike that morning and go and do that. But because I'm self-aware of that, I go, I don't need that guy right now. I'm just looking to go and get some fitness in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's a great asset and been able to know that today. So even if I'd have had the ultimate dad who was completely emotionally aware, then yeah, I think you look at Tiger Woods, that's Earl Woods. You look at Venus and Serena, that's Richard Williams. Emotionally aware, knows himself, strong. Well, that doesn't exist. Really, that's so rare.
This is something we were probably going to get
into
later.
That's what I pride myself on as a father, and I see it playing out all the time with my son already at four. I mean, I'm getting him to walk away from that, do that. I'm pulling the teacher, said, yeah, he won't be doing any of that. I pull him to the side and said, look, if you don't want to do it, don't do it.
This
is what I wanted to
don't
ask
get him. Don't get, do you know my biggest fear? Because he's already starting to like football. But I mean, I looked at a reel the other day with Jude Bellingham, said, no, I didn't even start till I was 11. And they said, didn't start till you 11? He said, no, my dad used to take me, he used to play cat and mouse. I used to pick the ball up and just volley it over the fence. It's boring. That's Bellingham. It wasn't like crammed with all this information. Yeah. I didn't even play. But what he did, stayed whole. And most people aren't whole.
That's what I said we were going to perhaps come to later, but now it seems the right time. You as a parent now, we're all parents, we've all got young kids. Yeah. What you know it's now, have you got like a way that you would want to bring up your children in terms of the emotional side of things? Is it good to be disciplined? Is it good to let them do what they want?
Just be themselves. Being the owner of a company, being the manager of a football team, being a star player, or being a father, it's leadership. Yeah. So my brand, Sweat and Courage, my company, is that the discipline, the sweat bit, you're going to work. Because if you want to be anything in life, you've got to work like a dog. That's anything. That has to be a given. But it's not a given. I need to explain what that is to you and I need to constantly pull you to that. But the courage bit is the bit that no one talks about. It's the bit that I didn't know about. The sweat bit wasn't a problem for me. I was a workhorse. My mum brought me up that way. I was, as a kid, I was out running in the streets at the night. I often tell my daughter, she's 12 now, and I just remember the girls used to knock on my door at 12. There's a girl opposite and put love notes through the door, and I was telling my daughter, I used to rip them up and just drop them back on her doormat. My daughter's looking at me like that. I said, because I'm going to be a footballer. Like, I'm not interested in any of that, which is an incredible focus, which is great, but no emotional regulation, which is the courage bit, none. Yeah. So I need to give them the emotional awareness of who they are and then the sweat. Then other than that, do what you want.
But the courage thing is the hardest thing,
isn't
it?
The hardest thing.
Both my boys are in academies, and we might mention academy in a bit. Like my youngest one, he doesn't already play free. He's worried about the physicality. He's worried about everything. He's worried about the coach. He's worried about playing against the other boys.
Oh,
and he's playing a bit like he's within himself. Mm. And I watch him in the garden, and I'm like, he's amazing. He's as good as his older brother.
Yeah.
But his older brother plays with, got his socks down, ponytail, plays with freedom. And I'm like, healthy disrespect. And I'm like, I use it all the time to get him to hang on to it, drift off, cheat. Like, you know,
stay up the pitch,
do what you want to do, try and meg someone on the halfway line, give the ball away, do it again.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do that, isn't it? So I'm looking for thinking, I'm not getting it right with me little one.
I saw a clip with Jordan Peterson where he was with another guy, and the guy tells him a story, and he said, because they say that up until after 11, your peers. Yeah, he asked his son. His son was 20. This guy's son. He said to Jordan Peterson, he said, "I asked him what did you need from me as a father?" And he said, "Well, up until 10, 11, just your time. After 11, it was just to be there for me. And after 16, be the damn best version of yourself every day." This guy went, "Fuck!" This guy's in his 60s, really successful businessman. And he went to Peterson. He said, "Yeah, that mirror is unbelievable. Like, just be the best version of yourself." Like, so it's like that's the burden that overwhelms me every day. I have to continue to, and the minute you back off it, I was saying to a player the other week, he'd lost himself as a player, and I said to him, "What happened? I signed for this club, and then, you know, I felt the pressure to perform, and then they said, 'Look, we want you to play a slightly different role here,' so I played that." And then, and then I said, "We're 8 weeks on from that moment. And all you've done for 8 weeks is lose yourself."
Yeah.
"You've listened to that. Did you believe in that tactic?" "No, not one bit." "What did you do?" "I listened to it." "Then something with your wife." "Yeah, I did that." "Then she said that." "Then he said that." And I said, "Well, that you've given me about 50 examples. So every one is an inch. You've gone, or a mile. You've gone 50 miles back from who you are."
Lost yourself.
That first moment, the top players go, "I appreciate it." I go, "I won't be doing any of that."
Yeah. And that's like, whether you think that's arrogance or selfishness.
It's complete self-awareness. People call it arrogance because it looks like that. It's self-awareness.
And selfishness. It's being selfish, isn't it?
Well, the self, but look at the word self. It's just self. All the add-ons to self are just add-ons. It's self. And the child comes in the self. There is no add-ons to have.
Yeah.
Like, I can already see in Harrison, I've got three daughters, but he, he's wild. Because his mum was successful in sales, so he's wild. If he loses anything, he was trying to get a little thing in his truck, a little brick. And I saw him doing it, and then he couldn't do it. And he got this truck and just whacked it off the wall.
I have that with my boy. Right. Can't lose.
I'm able to label that as that. That's a level of drive. That's a level of desire to do it right.
Yeah.
Great. How long can you hang on to that? And he's very emotional. He just comes up all the time. He said, "I love you, Daddy." And he talks about death, and we're watching Lion King. They say, actually, the more in touch you are with death as a child, the more creative you are. Death's the ultimate truth. Again, Peterson talks about this, or Jung, or all in psychologists. But, yeah, so he's very emotional. So I'm looking going, shit, he's probably quite like me. Very emotional, very driven. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in one other thing you do in your life. We're gonna get you to hang on to that.
Yeah.
And I've succeeded if that's the case.
Yeah.
Everything else, I'm not bothered.
Fabulous advice.
Well, but tough.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because what I've realised about authenticity is, I was saying this to someone this morning, the more authentic you are, the more confrontation. I've had four major confrontations this week. I was the lead. In my playing career, I was a people pleaser. I got my head down. I'd get nailed after a game and just take it like a good boy. Since I found myself up from the ashes at the end of my career, coming out of that, I was like, well, all that's left, because the money's gone, house, everything's gone. It's just me, skin and bones, and just be that. Just be you every day and see what that brings. And 12 years on, it's been incredible. But what it means is you don't choose confrontation, it's coming. Because if I go, "I feel this," someone's going, "Well, I want this." Well, I'm not doing that. Well, now
you're ruthless now with your time. And if
well, yeah, even the word ruthless, it's I'm just authentic. So if I'm not doing it, I'm not doing it. If I'm not,
if I don't want to, if you want to get up, you've had enough of the podcast, you get up, walk out, and say, I'm doing it. See you, lads.
Because I tell
don't
you
have
what,
a coffee.
But I tell you why, guys, because I've realised every time I don't, I go back a yard. And the more conversations I have with people, you're dragging them back to that. And then you get exposed to the highest level of performers. They don't compromise ever. They just don't.
Sorry, go on, mate.
I saw your comment when... Kevin De Bruyne had a go at Pep Guardiola,
didn't he?
Brilliant,
wasn't it?
And I thought, brilliant.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
And I love that. And you made a good comment. Other people are going, he shouldn't be undermining it. You go, no, if you're going to manage these best players, that's what they're going to be like. Yeah. Now, Pep's got to be an incredible leader to cope with them. But if you've got winners in your team, you're going to get them kicked back.
Well, because we go back to the four-year-old. If De Bruyne is my four-year-old right now, like Harrison now, I want you to do this. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Fine. Because you don't want to do it. Yeah. Now, there has to be a structure, right?
Yeah.
But within the structure, and this is where Pep is brilliant, because people get bogged down with Pep and they think it's tactics. And I've spoke to lads at City. It is, but it's not what the media drive in about the detail. It's not. But the reason the media drive the detail is because it confirms the whole rhetoric. All the licences are now right. Everyone's right. Because it's easier to go detail. We can all study it. We can all break it down.
And we can
all
analyse it.
You can't quantify the soul.
Yeah.
Whereas Pep got that, he's the ultimate because he's got enough detail, but then he lets people go loose.
Yeah,
and it'll be hard for him to let him go loose because he's a big character. So his character at that point getting humiliated in the arena by De Bruyne, he has to come back and go. The only thing that is offended right now in Guardiola when he walks back is my ego because I want it this way and he's saying it's that way, and he's able to go, you know more than me, because you're out there, and you're Kevin De Bruyne, so.
He's put his ego
ego. I have this in my course. We study ego. And I always say to people, they come on the... Only the ego is offended. Because if you go to me now, I hate your jumper. I go, okay. Now, the only thing that can be offended is, I want that jumper to be the best jumper. Or I really like that. It's just a fucking jumper. Do you know what I mean? It's your opinion of a jumper. Now, I didn't have any of this as a career. So if you're this, you're that, I'm listening to everyone. Yeah, I must be this, I must be that. I don't like that about you. Too aggressive. Do you know what I mean?
We spoke on the way up here, actually. Two things I was going to say, but this one's just come to mind. Mm. We spoke on the way up here about actually us three and actually the lads at Evolve, about being a product of your environment and actually driving each other to standards and how, like, what you were just saying there, it might not always be what you want to hear. Like, me and Sam talk all the time.
Me and him will go for beer after and we will challenge each other, like, as in, but also...
Ruthless.
Pushing each other all the time, going, like, what are you doing? Like, and I'm thinking, like, both got egos. Who's the strongest? Who's the best? Who's the cleverest? Who's going to earn the most money? But you're driving each other all the time, aren't you? So you're not surrounding myself with idiots. I'm surrounding myself with people who are challenging me.
But just, I'm super conscious... I'm going to share it. We have to get right with the words, and I've done so much work on these words because I used to think I knew what they all meant, and when we know what words mean, it's unbelievably enlightening.
It's like flippant to just say it out there.
It is, and I used to do it. But ego, I don't think that is two egos. I think it's just the winner, the 4-year old winner, the 4-year old winner. I see this. It's challenge. Yeah. Ego is, well, I'm not talking to you anymore. I'm going to ignore you. That's when the ego comes into play.
And I think as well, because me and Sam are like, you know, extra close. And we both say this probably more so off air because we hammer each other on it. But like, I want him to do so well. And I know when he comes back to me and says, you need to, I know, I take it with the utmost, like, I know he wants me to do so well. And I know we've had these conversations where just pushing each other to that next level. So actually, nothing he ever says to me is offensive.
No.
I'm never offended because I know... The place in which it originates from is a place of, mate, I just want you to be brilliant.
Yeah.
And like, obviously that takes a lot of time and you have to know someone.
And for me, that's high performance. What you're doing there, that's a very rare culture. It's why a lot of number one leaders will get weak people around them.
Yeah.
It's really hard, which is really hard for me as a consultant going into where I go, and I work with the leaders at all the place I go to. Yes, I work with the sales floor of the players, but I always work with the leaders as well. I have time one-on-one away from everyone with the leader, with the head coach in America, the head coach here and the leaders. Challenging. And I always say to them, the day I'm not sharing my opinion, I'm not advising, I'd never do that. I'm sharing the truth. You do what you want with it. But the minute you don't want to get challenged, I want to get challenged.
Yeah, need it.
And only the ego is offended.
Yeah.
And that's where you realise someone's limited. I've worked with so many people over the years. You realise they get to a point where they're done with the challenge. I don't want this anymore.
Well, that brings me to what I was about to say a minute ago.
That's your level.
Which was with these standards and like the self and the, you know, you being totally uncompromising with that, which I think I definitely relate to and the lads will relate to as well. Do you think that takes, for me, it takes a lot of energy and it becomes tiresome. And actually there's a lot of times where you feel like you want to crack, but it's almost like, and I don't know myself, but when you potentially were in rehab and you almost want to relapse, but you just know that little immediate gratification, so you never really succumb to it and you keep up with it and you stay with it. And there's definitely times I just think, you know, whether I've not eaten enough or whether we've been in the gym in the morning or I've had enough sleep, I often find myself just going, right, I'm holding my family, my employees, everyone around me to a certain standard. And because of that, I'm having to maintain that standard for myself. But actually, sometimes I think, fucking hell, do you know what? I wouldn't mind just dropping them standards a little bit, but I won't, because I know what the repercussions of that would be. Do you ever get tired of driving that?
It's exhausting, but there was the clip last year, 4 weeks to go in the Premier League, and City were at Fulham. And the guys who do my service sent me this. He goes, would this clip work for you? I said, I didn't even see it because I was with the kids. Yeah. It was before the game in the tunnel. There was an ice bucket at Craven Cottage because it's quite tight in the corner there. Pep Guardiola was sitting on this ice bucket and his head was down, his hands were here, and he just looked absolutely broken. And this was pre-game. And the Sky cameras picked it up and they went, Kevin... Pep Guardiola there looking deep in thought, and but he's without De Bruyne today, he's without so-and-so. I thought, what are you talking about? Nothing to do with De Bruyne being out. He's sitting there in the magnitude of everything. He's allowing himself to feel everything. I'm tired. My family's in Barcelona. I've got to win the quadruple. It means we've got to win every game, the next nine. I'm exhausted. Am I good enough? That's where he was. And that's exceptional because he allows himself to sit there, then comes out.
Surrendering.
It's mind-blowing. Yeah. So, but also what I need to say is, I today ride easy in the saddle. I don't beat myself up. I want to train 4 days a week. It's probably more like two or three at the moment because I'm busy. I want to do the ice every day. It's probably 3 to 4 times a week. I accept the fact that I'm human, whereas I didn't accept that.
But it's because you're striving to do it every day that you do it two or three or four.
I agree. Yeah. Because of the personality is the winner. Nothing's ever enough. That's the addict.
Well, I phoned Sam.
As a player, when you're having those conversations in your head saying, I need to do this every single day, how is your mindset then compared to now? Would you have to do it and would it consume you?
It was consuming. I was a perfectionist. So what's frightening is I remember Paul Ince saying to me one day, and that I was at 28, 29 at Milton Keynes, and he brought me in. I remember him looking at me one day. We were at a away game and we trained up there on the day of the game, Manchester, I think. And we were having the buffet in a hotel afterwards. But I'd found a place at that point. I was out of the team. Aaron Wilbraham was in that number one slot up front, so I was coming on. And I remember just kind of thinking, I'm done with all this. I can't waste my week ignoring the lads because it's all about me and not lonely, isolated. I'm just going to get on with the lads on the coach up and have a laugh. And I did. And in the small side of the game, I think I scored 6, just doing everything, which I could do. I remember him, we were having pre-match, never left me, and I was just, or the dinner that evening, I was getting pasta or whatever. And I remember feeling someone's eyes burning me. So I looked up and I saw Paul Ince standing there, and he said, some player, you big man. I went, oh, thanks, boss. And I looked down again. He went, no, I'm being serious, some player. And it was like he was studying an animal in the zoo. And I look back now, I think he saw me, because I'd surrendered and that was there. And he'd been at United, England. He probably thought, what is he doing here? 6'3", aggressive, athletic, first in, last away, scores goals, technically good. What are you doing here? I didn't have a clue. What, any of it? I don't know. So I was a perfectionist, yeah.
For that point, you were just
absolute perfect. When we understand perfectionism, when we feel things deeply, back to me being sensitive, fear of failure, fear of not being the best, fear of judgment. I'm feeling all this fear. There's only two choices with that. We numb out. So we numb out. We just like, I'm not going to feel any of that, which is why all the lads are taking snooze. Numb. Or perfectionism. Because then we think, well, the only way of dealing with this is being perfect.
Yeah.
And that's what I was. I'd dip in and out of numbing, drinking or whatever, sleeping around. Or then I'd go, now I'm perfectionist. So I'd be fighting this perfectionist numbing. I remember being in Sporting Chance and Tony Adams came in to talk to the guys and we went for a walk one day and he was telling me, I think when he was assistant manager at Portsmouth, they were watching me or something. And I'd scored a load of goals and at Southend at the time. And he said to me, what were you doing? I said, I was out every Wednesday, every Sunday, Monday, just drinking for like 8 weeks. He said, seven goals in seven games, called hat-trick against QPR. And did it. And I said, I'd just given up on it all. But the frightening thing is I'd given up on the thinking. I'm tired. Yeah. So I'm just going to go out, get drunk, train hard every day, but I'm not going to be in like a lunatic.
Yeah.
Now the creativeness comes out. But then the moral compass after 8 weeks goes, you can't do this. Yeah. You don't live like this. Stop drinking for like 8 months. Now I'm perfectionist again. So I'm constantly, people go, 20 clubs. I think, well, try doing that. You can't. It's going to be a yo-yo. Yeah. And because you're good, people are like, I'll take him. He's out of the team. We'll get him. We'll revive him here. Resuscitate him. Well, I always was resuscitated on loan. First six games on loan, I'd always score four or five goals. Then I'd just come off again. Now I'm back in perfectionist. And well, now I've got to hang on to the... I've got to hang on now. I can get a move.
So,
and
so where is the sweet spot then? If you're a 25-year-old or 22-year-old footballer now, where is that sweet spot
it's
in
work
terms
I do
of...
with the lads.
Perfectionism.
What are you feeling? I've got this 1, 2, 3. Vulnerability, acceptance, and courage. Vulnerability means the truth. So if someone sits with me at 25 and goes, how are you feeling? Scared, frightened, inadequate. Okay, let's start here. Get it all out. Now, do you deny the fear of failure or do you accept it? I have to accept there's a fear of failure. I might not win, might not be good enough. And now what we're left with is just sweat and courage. Like you have to monitor yourself on just running and courage as a footballer. So I'm working with you. When I started to work through this process with top level players, and I saw their performance go through the roof. What the fuck? I mean, just ridiculous. And then I'm seeing all this on Sancho. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, the level of coach education, because it's that simple. Can we just say how I'm fucking feeling? Jadon Sancho, the poor guy, sitting there, shirts heavy. I'm Man United. Yeah. Expectation. Am I good enough? I'm afraid of failing, afraid of humiliation. I'm getting judged everywhere, nailed on social media. Let's start there.
So you would help you.
Overnight.
You could help him instantly.
Overnight. And I say that today, 12 years of doing this. And it's the truth. Someone said to me the other day, a coach said to me, how quick does it take you to get a breakthrough with a player? I said, 10 minutes. Complete soul breakthrough. He's like, what is that? I said, because I start with utter vulnerability. So if I'm sitting with a player... someone goes, what do you? I said, well, I'd start. And I often just collect my thoughts. And I'd be like, it's fucking horrible being a footballer, isn't it? I hate football. I hate all of the people in it. Vile industry. Sometimes I hate myself. That you wake up on a match day, you're just thinking, you're going to bus crash or just miss the game. And I just start pulling up all my depth. And I watch, and I don't deliberately watch, but I've seen it now. You just see him start to just watch you and go, no one said this shit.
Yeah.
And I'm dying.
It starts to resonate.
And I'm dying to say this.
Yeah.
And so now you just see it.
Like, I don't want to play. I want the game called off.
I went to see a player the other day and he had snooze with me and he hid his snooze. Said, why are you hiding your snooze? I said, I'll have some. Mm. He's like, really? I said, well, I smoke cigars. I've got a collection. I never smoke cigarettes. I don't really drink. I can drink. I'm not an alcoholic. I take it or leave it. But I got into cigars about 10 years ago. I got a collection. They're an experience. You have to go and sit somewhere. So I go and sit in the forest once a week and it takes an hour to smoke a cigar. Just go and sit. And it's a time to reflect.
Yeah.
So I said, it's stronger than snooze. He goes, I got on one of those in Dubai. It destroyed me. I said, yeah, it's stronger than that. So, I mean, I don't want one, but I'll have one if you want one. So he's used to being, we've got to hide all this. Yeah, no.
For the listeners, snooze, not a lot of people know, but it's tobacco. It's an epidemic in football.
Absolute epidemic. That and sleeping tablets.
CEO
of Sporting Chance said sleeping tablets are the biggest thing. We go back to the numbing. I'm just going to fall asleep into a coma because I can't sleep because of my head, or I'm going to numb my feelings with snooze.
Yeah. I used to play with lads who would have snooze before the warm-up, come in before the game, put it back in.
Absolutely.
Half-time, put it in again.
Yeah. A couple of miles.
Playing on the PlayStation, put it in before they go to bed.
Just see that top, in. that lit up there.
Don't overthink. So they're looking for that free.
Well, you're looking to be
numb. They don't know they're doing that.
No consciousness. So when I say this to lads with snooze, because you're not performing. So, and what you're doing is I'm still not performing and I'm still feeling because I'm human, but I just need to keep numbing because I don't know how to deal with any of this. If you still want to take snooze and take it, I'm not bothered about the snooze, but if you need to understand what's going on here, because you just put six bags in an hour, that might be an issue, right?
Yeah.
At the same time.
Taking off tangent.
When you went to rehab, what was it for? What was your addiction?
Everything.
We're jumping all over the place.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
No, it's good. It's good. That's what we want to do, isn't it? Yeah. It's just as a bit of a guy. Go on.
Well, it's funny because I was saying this to someone the day. I go to like social things now. I was in London and found myself in a thing a couple of weeks ago in an evening, and it was quite a corporate thing. And guy went, high performance, really interesting. It was three or four guys, business owners, said, well, did you? Someone said about your book, you went to rehab. And they were like, shit, this is really deep. And I went, what was the issue? I said, well, 17 years of playing football, not feeling anything. I said, well, feeling everything, that's pretty tough. That's going to send you to rehab. And they were like, oh, expecting me to say I'm drinking or...
Yeah, that's what
I realised, look, this has never left me. When you go to Sporting Chance, it costs the PFA, I'm rough. I think back then, the head clinician, James, who found it with Tony Adams, said to me, I think it was like 14 grand a player, three players maximum a time. Do the maths. Yeah. That's a lot of money. So he said,
just to kind of validate you in then?
100%. And as a clinical psychotherapist as he was, he had to do a clinical assessment for 2 hours. I drove down there, my father's law's car absolutely broke and gone. At the end of that 2 hours, he sat up, he goes, yeah, I would like you to come in. This was on the Thursday. We start Sunday night. So if you come down Sunday afternoon, 30 days, but you absolutely need to be here. I was like, okay. And he never left me. He said to me, I need to tell you something. He said, 30 years of being a psychotherapist now in my own clinic in London. He said, you're as sick as any heroin addict I've ever sat with. I drove home to here thinking, what? Yeah. I've never touched a drug. I never touched a drug. Drink, women, do all that spending. I never touched it. And I'm just picturing heroin addicts in the gutter.
Yeah.
Now I understand that completely. When you understand addiction recovery, spiritual bankruptcy is the term that was used. You're spiritually and emotionally bankrupt. So you need to do whatever it takes to just bring yourself back. Well, emotionally, I'm bankrupt because 17 years of denying feelings as a player, denying feelings, feeling it all, denying feelings. What's left at the end of that? There is nothing left. Selling out on myself all the time. There's no self left. Self's gone. Nearly dead because I thought about suicide. I'd sat in the lay-by in a car. So the self's nearly dead. It's just like the embers are left.
So I said, what was your situation before? What was, so football wise,
Lincoln City got relegated.
Relationship wise, all that sort of stuff. Where were you at?
Absolutely. Lincoln had been relegated from the Football League. It was my last kind of thing. And that was really tough for me because I was broken at that point. Chris Sutton signed me. I grew up with him at Norwich. His dad was my coach. So there was a real, I'd come from Rotherham. I was 32. He was 36 in his first managerial job. It's only 4 or 5 years between a senior pro. I was gone. So I couldn't perform. Now, he's put me probably on the most money, and then he turns on me. And I don't blame Chris at all for that. That's just not being aware of himself and so where I am at.
When you say gone, physically or emotionally or everything?
Mentally, but not judging because he was detached from his emotions. Yeah. Go back to Chris. How did you feel when you signed for Blackburn for $5 million, terrified? That wouldn't be, no, I'm good. Yeah. He wasn't able to see in me. You can't be, at that point, probably 500 games. You can't have had 500 games. You can't have travelled the country. You can't be here without being tough, resilient, decent at whatever you do. That's a given. You must be struggling. Like, that's obvious. We need to sit with him. So that didn't happen. There's no blame at all there. So broken. Finished that. No club would sign me. I'm done. I'm now just travelling around Conference North for a bit of money. But even I got released by two clubs in Conference North called me and said, look, they've been embarrassed, the managers, like with your CV compared to all these young lads. Yeah. But I said, you don't have to say it. I've got nothing to give you. Then I went two leagues down from that, got released from Arlesey Town. Yeah. Got released. £150 cash released.
Yeah. Well, you're gone now because you're trying to be the best and you're like, I'm still,
because the soul of the winner's still there. If I score 20 goals, just gone. And but I know now it was the universe going, I know you're still fighting. You're going to learn this lesson. Because we want you, very spiritual, the universe is going, I'm going to keep smashing you until you learn. So I'm going to take away everything. And then that happened. And then, by the time I walked into Sporting Chance, I was recently married, got a daughter who was 3 months old. My wife at the time, who I still see, because my daughter's here, I see her 3 days a week. Really, she's gone on and had an amazing life, good partner. I'm really grateful for that. I just can't be around you anymore. I cannot be around your energy. It's just killing me. It's not good for our daughter. So she then asked me to leave the marital home. I got no money, 70 grand worth of debt. So I'm now, I look now, first night in Sporting Chance, it's pen and paper in your little bedroom. You have to write on your current situation, career, family, finances. Career, 22, no one will touch me, done. family, done. It was simple.
Finance, money, 70.
You've got another 15 minutes to finish.
I can laugh.
You've got another 15 minutes to complete that paper. No, honestly, it's fine. I've done.
No, it was under that. 10 seconds. He said you've got an hour. It was 10 seconds. I just sat and looked out the window. There yeah. no. Put a full stop. And I sat in the back bedroom of Sporting Chance in the middle of a forest and I heard this owl out the window. And I just, and I'll be honest with you, it was a spiritual moment because I never felt a sense of peace like it wash through me. It was the moment that you surrender when you go onto the pitch, like you said. It was just this feeling that now it's okay. Finally, it's okay. Because all of that's gone now.
So is it a fear of, like, having something to lose? But in that moment, there was nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose. Literally nothing. Because all that was left was skin, bones, and I was wanting to kill myself anyway. So it was like, well, there's nothing left apart from self. The stripping back. When you look at Buddhism, when you look at Christianity, when you look at the religions, which I've delved into all of them, I speak to all my Muslim friends and players, all the same. All faiths are the same thing. Suffering, suffering, suffering. The story of Christ. Jordan Peterson talks about the story of Christ. Really, it's about suffering. So you suffer, suffer, suffer. You give up. You reveal who you are. And that's why in Christianity, it's prayer. It's constantly handing over your life to Jesus. I'm not a Christian, but I do look at all the faiths. They run the world. You'd be stupid not to look at the faith. But they've all got the same message. The Buddha sat under a tree for 40 days and 40 nights. That's Buddha.
Yeah. The Christian faith as well is about, like you say, it's suffering through surrender. As a Christian, you surrender and it's the external factors that make you suffer.
Yeah.
So you surrender everything that you are and then you suffer through that.
Yeah.
You're critical of, I saw that though, Arnold Schwarzenegger was on the High Performance Podcast, wasn't he? And he talked about the importance of suffering, and you were like, that's nonsense though.
But because it's not suffering, it goes back to it's like the message he's giving to all his kids is, just work like a dog.
Yeah.
24 hours a day, work for 22. You're back into control. Yeah. There's no courage in that, it's just the sweat bit, which I'm all over. Yeah. Like, I'm not Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, like, incredible.
Yeah.
But if you had him on a lie detector test, or he was honest, and you were his best mate away from all, and I've sat with top people, I've sat with a couple of top people privately away from anything, and they've all shared, yes, I had the sweat, but you're right, in key moments, I had to risk everything on who I was. And that's, you just want that as well. Otherwise, we go away going, okay, I've got to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger again. All these young kids, I've got to be like Ronaldo, I've got to be in the gym every day.
Yeah.
And you see them all, stripped to bits, great bodies, crap. So what's the point?
Because mentally bankrupt.
Yeah, because there's no emotional. Well, I say mentally. I don't like the word mental because it's brain. Brain, lungs, liver, heart, they're all organs. The brain's an organ. I'm not my brain. It's spiritual. It's emotional. When we say, how do you feel? You point here. You don't point here.
Yeah.
How did you bend that one in there? I just kind of felt that the keeper was it. So I just. It's not what I thought. What he's doing.
No one ever asked that. You know, think of when we're playing football, my career. I mean, there was something with Peter Reid and all that. No one's ever. He's never gone like.
Speak to you about
Peter Reid's never gone.
Spirituality.
How are you feeling? Like, you know, I've done me cruciate. How are you feeling, Sam? Or you've made your debut, or you've had a nightmare. I've dragged off at half time, or whatever, and you're hammered by the manager. And
he call you a shithouse when you've done your cruciate.
Yeah. There's no like, how are you? There's no one's ever asked me.
But genuinely,
how are you? Genuine.
When Jurgen Klopp came to England and Pochettino, and they were hugging players. Yeah. It was. You remember that because no one else was doing it. Pochettino. Pep came after him really to England. It was Poch, and then I remember a mate of mine in the Premier League. He said, "It was embarrassing this morning. Senior players, the manager came in and he's trying to hug lads. It was like hugging a skeleton." And that's the problem. And when I'm not bashing any coaches, I have complete empathy. They are just a product of life and the system, as I was. So they can't attach to their feelings to give it to the players. They can't. But bless them, they're going, well, Klopp's winning. He's doing his thing. I'll copy it. And I completely have empathy for that. Like, they're trying to win. There's no coach. Manager sits in their office, goes, I really want to get sacked. They're all desperate, afraid of losing, they're going on courses. They're signing up for all that. There's no course teaching any of this.
Yeah.
Healing themselves. I think what's enabled me to have a voice where people don't always challenge me is I am 6'3". The reputation was tough. People say I wouldn't want to play against Drew Brown. I don't know about any of that. I'm afraid. I'm a 6-year-old boy.
In the tunnel, Drew, I remember.
Yes.
I remember you being a big guy. You were like, it's short time and you hang it up and you were mouthing, shouting and bawling, going, elbow people. Like, vomiting fear out. Who's this lad? I remember you coming to Wrexham and you were like that.
I remember that in the game at Shrewsbury in the tunnel. Like, you kind of stood alongside me. massive bicep, shaited. And I was like, I was only a kid. I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah, it was all in that.
I'm going to get, I do not want to go to the challenge, true. But yeah,
as well, we're just on that, because I've got one as well. I played against you when you were at Southend, and like the sleeves were rolled up, and like, we was two centre halves playing against you, and we were like jumping up for headers, like thinking, fuck it, it's coming here, we're going to get elbow, we're going to get something. And then I think you jumped through on the partner centre half, got sent off. And then I remember watching you walk off the pitch and actually thinking, oh, fucking hell, like, leave it out. And your own fans were going crazy as you were walking off. And I was just thinking, and you were just sort of almost like defiant, you know, like, and you were walking off. And I just remember thinking, all right, leave it out, flipping it. Like, he's your own player.
Yeah.
Tell us about your mindset then, Andrew, when you're doing that.
Terrified. So what Johnny Wilkins has said it in the small in the high performance podcast, he's a very enlightened guy. He said, if you come into the Twickenham dressing room for a game, all you see is fear manifesting. Some guys are saying affirmations in the mirror. Some guys are doing press-ups. Some guys are shouting. Some guys are vomiting. Yeah. It's all, no one at that point can deal with the uncertainty of the next 90 minutes. Yeah. So if you'd have sat down with me before the game and said, how are you feeling, Drew? Terrified. What does that fear make you want to do? Get up and shout and look tough and do press-ups. And
trying to fight again.
What did you do when you were 8? I just got with my teammates and said, come on, today we'll play for you. And that, which is what I do with guys today. It was all fear. I'm afraid. So what I'm trying to do is play a character. I'm trying to deal with the absolute fear that I've got to score, got to hold the ball up, got to win headers, got to play well, got to get a move. All the fears there, and I don't know how to deal with any of it. So it's coming out unconsciously. It's all unconscious.
Yeah, we didn't, like, we all had our thing. Like, sometimes I would be shouting and bawling. I'd be flipping though, so that even you don't even know what you're doing yourself.
You don't know what you're
doing. One minute I'm shouting and bawling, the next minute I'm going, no, I'm going to try and be really calm now. I want people to think I'm calm. But people think I'm chilled. And we had a couple of, remember, like, Wrexham, Silvio Spann and that. He was chilled listening to Bob Marley, so I was like, I'm going to start doing that. So again, trying to find a way. So one minute I'm there with my head cut on.
Three little birds.
Next minute I'm banging on the wall going, come on, lads. Next minute I'm going in the toilet. I'm trying every little different thing.
All of that.
Because you just go, that's
cool. We spoke about this before you came on. I don't know if we can cut it, if you can't share it, but you talk about Mo Salah.
Well, like, yeah, just sharing with it. It was a friend of mine who plays for Egypt, and he was saying to me, when watching Mo Salah was incredible for him, because he came and joined up the Egyptian squad, and an English-based player, and he said, watching him before the game, kind of just towel over his head, kind of doing his meditation stuff and his prayer and stuff that he does, and you know, trying to almost the point where the fitness coach, okay, we're going out for the warm-up now, as an English fitness coach, I think, with the Egyptian team, and Salah's kind of just still putting on his socks and boots and kind of undone and just gets in the tunnel and okay, and then it gives the ball away for the first 10, 15, 20 minutes, but doesn't go under and just scores two goals and win the game. And we were talking about the power of faith, because ultimately if you haven't got faith, you think you're in control. That's the truth. And I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about faith. They're two different things. That's why I heard Jordan Peterson asked about God. He said, there's no point me talking about God, because people think, well, you have to believe in this. And he said, it's not that. So there's no point. So Mo Salah at that moment is going, I have a faith in something greater than all of this. And I actually have got loads of desire, and I want to be the best player, because he's full of desire. He's a competitive guy, of course. But it's all too much. And I just need to be the six-year-old.
Yeah. So handing over that.
Handing everything.
Handing over.
You can have the result. You can have the 90 minutes. Yeah. You can have how many score, where they judge me. You can have all of that. I just need to make sure I'm Mo. So that moment that comes and he can drop a shoulder and just bend it in the top corner, everyone else is snatching at it and blasting. Because at that moment, they're still in an element of control. But the reason this doesn't get talked about is because people think this is religion. And now you're in, you either believe in this or you don't. And it's spirituality. I heard David Bowie, someone sent that the other day, he said, religious people aren't looking to go to hell. Spiritual people have been there. And I love that from David Bowie. And I thought, that's right. I've been to hell in my life. And I've realised in that moment that I can't control anything. I've just got to be me every day. And that's it. That's the spiritual essence. It's a spirit. Well, but in football, you're a great team spirit. We all use the words, but then the minute you say spirituality, we don't do that. But you've just told me you've got a great team spirit. We don't talk about spirit. You know, it's like, this is insanity. Yeah. What is team spirit? What is Leicester's team spirit? Really what it is Ranieri pulls it together. He's an experienced old Italian guy who's seen everything. What do you do, Vardy? I like Red Bull and snooze. You do that then. What do you need? Well, let's just have a few pieces. Let's get together. Got loads of good players. Going to run for each other. We're going to believe. It really is all it is. Tough to do. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but that's it.
And you talk about the importance of selfishness, since, didn't you, about that Leicester team, and said Jamie Vardy, you know, selfish person.
Mm.
Some of them Leicester lads, selfish people, but just in the right environment. Well, little bit of structure, obviously.
Yeah.
Big personality.
But again, it's the word self. We all come into the world himself or herself. Or if you're a plant, itself. Like with the self. That's the origin of all Christianity, Buddhism, is the self. Mm-hmm. Buddha sat under the tree for 40 days, 40 nights, to not drink, not eat, virtually starve himself, virtually to die, to collapse all egoic thoughts, to be the self. That is Buddhism. That's the origin. So all the meditation, Buddhist, you're just trying to find the self. So selfishness, it's a strong sense of self. Now, if the self, myself, is there's an absolute competitor in there, that's a gift. So what's the competitor need? Constant feeding, winning, more, going. Awesome. That's probably going to be very selfish then, because it's all about what he needs. So that has to be normal. Now, but without emotional understanding of that, then it leaks into an ugly line. Yeah. What we're quick to do is go, well, the All Blacks thing, no dickheads, we don't have that in here.
Yeah.
I've had that with so many coaches all over the world who've got this no dickheads in there.
Yeah.
Had one, an ice hockey team in America, no dickheads. And I said, we need to, what is defined dickhead to the head coach? Well, you know, someone who doesn't, but like so-and-so, is he any good? He's my best player, but I said, well, hang on a minute here. He's your best player probably because he's absolutely driven. He's a monster.
Yeah.
And so he's constantly, his desire is make it, I need to achieve, I need to be the best, I need to score the goal. That's why you've got him.
Yeah.
Now, because he doesn't understand that, it will leak into, I'm going to ignore him and do, well, you have to sit with him and understand. And I've sat with sales guys in London, the owner's like, if he keeps going, I can't have him around the culture, but he makes me 10 times more than anybody else. So I sit with this guy and say, look, I love your selfishness. I've sat with guys 2 hours to break their ego down. They've gone to me, I just need to be the man.
Yeah.
40-year-old man, I just need to be the man. I said, no, I understand that, of course. I said, but would you say you have been the man? Yeah, for 10 years I have been. Well, maybe you're just good. But the truth is, the owner needs more. The team needs you. And if you keep, you know, and so you need to break the ego down to get into humility, to go, the selfishness is fine, it's great, it's champion, it's amazing. But if you're aware of it, now you can watch it. Like I watch my selfishness, and at times it leaks over.
Yeah.
And of course, as we all know, the one person that holds me accountable is to my wife. So she was like, yeah, you're a selfish arsehole. And I am. But
you're saying that you're aware of it and you recognise
super aware,
it yourself.
And it will leak over. At times it will leak negatively. And I just go, okay, I should have done more for you there in the morning with the kids. Fucked up. But you know, but if we just go, that's bad. Well, this is where all the addiction starts. Because it's like, I do this topic on toxic shame. Shame is you are. Football is full of you are statements. I did it the other night with this group of 15. We're in week 4.
Expand on that a little bit then.
Toxic shame is the root of all addictions. It's the root of all destruction of performance. Shame. So toxic shame is you are. Healthy shame is that was probably not the best thing to do. You see what I mean? So I get caught in possession. That was probably not the best thing to do in that moment.
Yeah.
Who the fuck dribbles in there and you're... Now I'm shamed. Now I'm questioning everything. Yeah, who dribbles now? I'm a bad... Yeah. That's football. From the age of 8, all it is shame. I mean, and all the coaches don't realise they're all shame-based. So when I wrote the leadership course, like, unless the coach heals his shame, he's just going to vomit it onto the next lot, which is why the cycle, which is all this mental health, it's a waste of time. Waste of time, yeah. The shame, because we all come out the back end of the career, we don't know who we are. Because you've been told, I was told you're too aggressive, then you're too nice, then you're too selfish, then you're not selfish enough.
Yeah.
I'm just... What?
Who are you? Like, who am
and again, I go to top players. I know who I am. Nothing you say infiltrates that. And I always say to the coaches, if you want to manage... I'm going to say it. It's the truth. We can all see it. Graham Potter jumps up to Chelsea from Brighton. Now, you know, having worked with lads at the summit of the game, these lads are at the summit for a reason. Some get lucky, fine, but not most. They're there because for some period in time in their career, they've been unbelievably consistent. Yeah. Even if it's 6 months, a year, they've been relentless for a year, they get a move. Yeah. So they have to be selfish to be there.
Yeah.
There's a level of self-knowing up there and ruthlessness, which unless you can understand that in yourself, you cannot see it in them. So I'd say with Graham Potter, I think I'd be right in saying you go to that level unless you can sit with that player and go, yeah, I'm more selfish than you. When Mourinho was asked years ago, how do you, he goes, well, my ego is bigger than them, so it's easy for me to understand them. I relate to that. Desire, yeah, mine's there. Yeah. Selfish, yeah, I understand all of that. And I'm not knocking Graham at all. It's the reason I wrote my education, which the PFA have now bought, and we run the first one this year, Advanced Level Emotional Intelligence. You need to know who he is.
Yeah.
Because if you can't get the best out of him unless you can recognise who he is. And you know at that level, he's going to be selfish, driven, he's not listening to you. What do you do? Say he's a bad egg? Yeah. I'd say that's Ten Hag right now. And I have, again, empathy for Ten Hag. He stood there with false vulnerability the other night, you know, after the game, and said, it's all on me, I'm the coach. But I didn't feel it through the screen. I didn't feel him going, I've failed the guys here. It's all, because that probably would be the wrong thing to do. Don't do that to the media. Yeah. Do it to yourself. I've sat with head coach, and I won't mention their name, when they've been losing a lot of games. And I've sat with them, and they're in the, I've spoke to players, and they're like, yeah, gaffers, any mistake we make, he's on us. And I've sat with them and said, you're losing the dressing room. How do I, are you going to get sacked? How do you change this around? I said, well, look, you've got to understand that fear has built up on you. You haven't dealt with that. You haven't talked about it and discussed it. Now you're unconsciously, so you can't afford a mistake from them because you're going to get sacked. So because you've not dealt with the fear, you're now just blaming every mistake, but then you're losing the players. Mm-hmm. But you're human. We all do it. How do I turn this around? I said, vulnerability is the key to leadership. What I would suggest is vulnerability is the truth. Are we agreeing it's the truth? It's the truth, Drew. What's happened? What about if you were to stand in front of them in the auditorium at the training ground on Thursday morning and say, guys, I just want to say I've let you all down. I've failed you. I never wanted to be this when I became a coach, a player, but I have now, all the fears that I had as a player, I've become it as a coach, and I'm killing you guys.
Putting onto you.
I'm killing you. And I need you more than anybody. So I'm really sorry. And it won't happen again. Let's go and train. I've sat with two coaches that have done that. They've gone on wins of 9 and 10 wins in a row. And
as a lad, though, amazing to hear that.
That massively is
amazing to hear that.
Yeah.
And you go, that's a vulnerability of the league. And you go, right, can we help him as well?
Yeah.
Because we're in this together.
Yeah.
I'm just taking a deep breath out there because even like, that takes so much. You can't underestimate. And the guys I've done it with who've then gone and done that, I know they're limitless as coaches. Because if you can do that, you've got no limit to what you can be.
Because it's hard.
The hardest.
Even as a leader now, especially with your staff, I'm nervous, I'm scared. I've got like, you know, a new school, you've got your school. I'm worried about my business. I'm worried that we're going to go wrong.
I'm terrified every day. I've got businesses, I've got family of six, I've just strapped into a big mortgage. What do you do? Well, I just go back to, am I decent at what I do? Yes. Has the last 10 years shown me that? Yes. Do I know what tomorrow? No. What have I got today? Sweat and courage. Don't lean out of anything. What's the first thing? Meeting this morning, phone call, Zoom. You ask me a question, answer it. Podcast, ask me a question, answer it. Not interested what people think. Just do that. Go, next one. Because the minute I come off that, what, you're now, I don't know, you're back in the rat race. What
do you want? Fascinating. Going back to your sporting chance journey then.
Yes.
So you went in, you... put all those things on the paper, hit rock bottom. What was the next steps for you going through that process?
Well, the next morning I had to go down to the little lounge area there at Sporting Chance, and there was the three other guys, and we had to present that, stand up and present that to the others and the head therapist, James. So I did that, and that was the 30 days in there. Loads of one-to-one therapy, walking meditation, did loads of little things that we did. Equine therapy, which was incredible, which was with horses, because horses have got a sixth sense. So horses apparently have got a level of heightened awareness and emotional awareness of, which is like a whole another sense. I didn't even know this. Right. So they do equine therapy.
Oh, sorry, elaborate on what you do then.
Well, absolutely. So they went to the stables, and it was a lady who used to be a top actor in the theatre in London, loved horses, she'd set up this place. So basically, you get allocated a horse. They'd explain, there's a horse in the field over there. Drew, you're going to have the red one there and the blue one, the black. There's six horses. Just walk up from the side. Their eyes are on the side. They'll feel you the minute you come into the field. They'll feel your energy off the ground. Yeah. If you're not centered, they'll slowly start walking away. You'll just see them slowly start moving. Unbelievable. So I was in a good place at the time. It was like week three. Yeah. So I slowly start walking towards the horse. My horse, and walk up and just slowly move towards it with a hand, and they'll feel the hand. They'll feel the energy of you through the hand, and then they might let you put that hand on them.
So it's not on this one, just next to them.
Yeah, next to them, just slowly. But the minute your energy will change, they'll start moving. So, and one guy who was fighting the whole thing, it was Larry's next expert, where he's really fighting it. He hadn't surrendered by week three. He was still, he walked, this is all bullshit. He walks in there, his horse literally started walking. It was brilliant. And
this is fascinating.
And he couldn't get near it for the whole time.
Near Shrewsbury.
I'm sure.
We work with my business. Yeah, they do it.
They're, really? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They've got it's like it's all been funded. It's an amazing setup. I'll try and find the name before I leave so I can say it on air because yeah, they're really good people, but they're all funded and do exactly that.
So you managed to put your hand on the.
I was in a good place at that time. I mean, how can you not be? Look at me in week one. I was probably far. Yeah. So yeah. So it was 30 days of that. The idea really is you will find out where you've got lost, and at the end of it, you'll go okay. Now, why was I there drinking? That wasn't a thing. I think the biggest addiction for me was winning and thinking. I was addicted to thinking and addicted to winning or have to be the best, addicted. But if you looked at one exterior thing, probably sex was the addiction. Tiger Woods stuff, it was out of control for me. Porn, escorts, strip clubs. You start to realise people would laugh. It's funny because I can still laugh. I laugh myself today, but you'll be with mates. Like, that's all right though, isn't it? And you laugh. You go, because lads are lads, right? And I'm not precious. I just start laughing. I said,
I drink drugs.
That's all right.
Yeah, of course you are. Yeah,
was she any good? And I'm like, come on, guys. Like, the therapist said, well, you start to write your sexual history out, and then you ask, how did you feel? When you're leaving a one night stand, how did you? Well, hated myself, dirty, disgusting. Is that a good thing to be? No. Well, now you start going, well, why did you do it? And you start to break that down. When you're in that much pain inside and you're lost that much, you have to go externally to heal it.
Yeah.
Drink, so that's what gambling, you find in drugs, something. Sex, spending. Now there's 12 steps for everything, credit card anonymous, there's all kinds of things. Because you have to go outside of yourself. And the healing is, who am I? This where I think what I've done since that journey, and people have said to me, no one has taken these spiritual teachings and gone into high performance. Because I think what happens through that journey, and I pulled away a little bit from the 12-step fellowships after 3-4 years, it became very much another club. A bit like church can be a club. Are you in or are you out? Do you believe in the devil and Christ? Mm-hmm. If you don't, you can't come in. Do you believe? And I started to just be aware and go, well, look, because you sit in an anonymous meeting, Hydra, I'm a sex and love addict. After 4 or 5 years, I was starting to get really self-aware. I was doing loads of other stuff, silent retreats with monks, I was working with players. I started to just go, you know what? I'm a driven guy, sensitive. So I set the one there, hey, Drew, I'm a really driven guy, really sensitive, and that causes problems. And at the end of it, one of the elders said, look, Drew, I just need to pull you up on this. The ego is growing back. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, the fact that you're not saying you're this and you're taking your will. And I said, well, hang on a minute here. I didn't come out of my mum's womb as a sex and love addict. I came out as an emotional, sensitive guy who's very driven.
Yeah.
But I realised at that point I'd gone on a level of discovery beyond where they were.
Yeah.
Because they were like, well, I've
you're
given
almost
up,
a label
given
again, though, aren't you? You're almost a label.
Another label. Yeah. There we are. Yeah. And I have it now. I was in a head coach's office recently. He had a sign, be the coach. He said, you'll love that every day. So he left and I got a Sharpie pen and scribbled out the coach. Anyway, he rang me, he goes, did you just face my sign? I said, yeah. I said, what does it read now? He goes, B. I said, just B. Because what's the coach? What's the coach? Be the coach. What is a coach? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, sporting chance at the end of that. At the end of that, I had peace. I knew who I was.
Leaving there, you had peace. You
had peace. And I was like, wow, man, I can see where I've got lost. And I can't go back ever to that place again because I wanted to die. So what's being asked of me? Be yourself. That's all that was being asked. Be yourself 24 hours at a time. All right.
And that's how you are now. You
well, because...
Be absolutely.
Yeah, because now. 12 years on, what that's shown me is it's brought finances back. It's brought family in abundance. It's brought incredible experiences. I mean, this year, just this year, if you'd have asked me on New Year's Day, what the year's gone. I've gone out and worked with the US national team. I'm working now at Southampton. I've written a course that's been taken by the PFA. Ridiculous.
So you've built a business, remarried, started a family, and now you've obviously got all of this. And for all of your experiences, this is like now your calling, as it were.
It's my calling. But I wake up every day with I'm nothing. I don't know who. I mean, it was funny because I've got like a you've seen the yoga mats with spikes on, you can get them, you've seen them for fascial stuff. Yeah. But I got like a grade A one, a sharp. And I lay on there in the dark this morning, do 20 minutes on there, and put Muji on and breathe to that. And then I get my ice tub, which I did this morning, 10, 15 minutes in that. And my wife
asked... What temperature?
I've got it down to 2 degrees.
Wow.
And this is just for feeling. For feeling.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to suffer, let go, and be. So let's suffer, which both of those are. Can't fight it. Can't beat the ice. It's not going to get colder. You can't beat the nails. They're not going to get less sharp or whatever they are. Plastic.
They're horrible.
Yeah.
20 minutes is some effort. If anyone's ever done that, like.
But it's not. It started off with 3-4 minutes. The ice started off with a cold shower. Yeah. Then I was like, wow, this really. I feel better. So you just go into it. Now I can do it. But I'm just trying. My mind will never change. Nothing's ever enough. I'm so sensitive. I'm driven, so it's like, yeah, that was good, but that's shit. Like, if I look at those 3-4 things that I've done this year, people go, celebrate the small wins, they're fucking gone, where am I going? Yeah, but you've done all this, I'm not interested in that, where are we going? That's always been, which is an amazing gift, because it's drive, it means you're pulling things that way. But unless you manage that, it just destroys
you. You've got to have that moment of gratitude, haven't you, to kind of keep going.
And that's the other thing I do, gratitude lists. And they get sent to me, clients send me their gratitude lists, and they're deep. Yeah. You know, when you first start doing gratitude, it's a...
Explain that to us then.
I write down, I am grateful for. But I usually do it after meditation, because after meditation, I'm now feeling, I'm now centered, and it comes out of you. When you first get people to do it, when I first start, I'm grateful for my coffee, I'm grateful for my house, grateful for my wife, kids, and which is fine. After 7-8 days, because I'll send the player or whoever I work with mine, and they go, jeez, yours are like 6 lines. Yeah, but at the start, give it 7 days. 7 days, they'll be there. Seven days of being centered.
What would it look like? What would you write on that?
Got mine this morning. It was, I remember what, because I had an argument with my wife yesterday, so it was like... really grateful for my wife, everything she is, the fact she challenges me, grateful for her opinion, grateful for all she does for my family, the kids. Without her, we don't have a family. Grateful for my business and the clients who trust me and they give me money. Without their money, I don't have anything, but I'm aware that they can go any moment. So, you know, just, it's coming from me. Well, now you leave the ice, you leave the nails, you leave you're like 40 minutes to 20, what? Okay, I'm pretty centered now. Come on.
But the difference from doing that compared to rolling out of the bed with a late alarm straight into the car on the way to work, it's completely different. You're already winning the day.
Yeah, but I'm also, again, to your brilliant point earlier, you can't just, I accept that I can't do that every day. Yeah. I've got 4 kids. It doesn't work like that. Like, there's some days I've got to help my wife. So I try and make sure that's at least 4 days a week. I don't do 7.
And even though you're driven and you want to be, you're able to step back and go, don't worry about that.
I am
don't
today. Beat yourself up. Yeah, because I realise they don't really take anything. Yeah. And this is where I was as a player. I was going to do a post later. I've seen Marcus Rashford. I was looking at Marcus Rashford the other night and the shirt hanging off. I thought, you've lost weight. You've lost weight. And I thought, I know where he's gone. He's gone into perfectionism. Did really well last year. Strong. He was probably doing.
Yeah.
Dropped off it. So now it's like, hit the gym or don't hit the gym.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what is all this? Where's Marcus? Marcus is lost.
Yeah.
Where's Marcus?
Fighting for, well, how do I, is this, how can I be the
well,
best
now I'll do this diet doing, and doing, now I'll do. And in the middle, there's no performance at the moment. It's like, well, where's Marcus? Who's Marcus?
So that would be your first question. You would sit down with him and go.
During that brilliant run last year, do you remember Rashford last season?
He was there.
I remember being at Elland Road and I was with the US team at a game, and so they were Anthony, the coach, was over. He said, do you want to come to the game? I've got to go and speak to the US players in the league squad. I said, I'll come to the game. So we're sitting up there before the game having some food, and someone came over in a United badge and everything. He said, Drew Broughton. I looked up, I felt really rude. I said, I'm being really rude. I said, I mean, probably concussions, I don't remember a lot. I said, probably know each other. He said, I was at Wrexham, sports scientist at Wrexham, was training. He said, and I said, Andy. I forget his name. He said to me, I said, what do you do now? He said, I'm an assistant technical director at Man United. I said, wow. He'd worked for the Premier League. He'd worked all his way. I said, wow. She was asking what I did, and Anthony's got me here working with players, and I worked with him as a coach. He's like, okay, wow. He said, the way we've got Marcus going this year and Ten Hag. I said, yeah, it's nothing to do with him. He said, sorry? I said, yeah, I'll just eat myself.
Okay. Just nonchalantly, yeah.
Just like you give him your thoughts, you're being yourself again.
Look, I said, what choice do I have?
Yeah, yeah. I know.
The only reason I'm sitting here with him,
right? Yeah, yeah.
The only reason I'm sitting here with him and have the opportunity of going to America is because he's seen my truth.
And this is that moment that, like, we spoke about. That's the moment I can't not say what I want to say.
Keep doing it,
like, whereas I've spoke to you about it before. Like, in their moments, I think, we walked in here, got into the hotel, and just because of the nature of the hotel, I said to you, didn't I? I said, just got to stop myself being childish. I don't know why, but we came in here.
No, don't stop
very
that.
Much like, you know, it's almost like this beautiful world. And I was like, I feel really silly. Like, I want to just do something stupid. And like, so I said to you, yeah. Like, just got to stop myself being really childish.
Brilliant.
It's that moment there, you've just got to say what's on your mind.
Because
it's amazing. And the reason why you are making a success is because of that. Because you've gone, it's not for
and
to
I want, and the And I've given you and some history to that. I was... broken,
yeah.
And all I had was self. There was no money, there was no house, there was nothing coming out of it. I was living on my brother's sofa. I had nothing, but I had self.
So when who are?
So I sit here with him, and he goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Oh,
brilliant.
Look, man," I said, "if you watch the game the way I watch football, which is not technically or tactically, I just watch players and I feel them emotionally and I can put myself there. You will watch, and the celebration, Rashford." I said, "You will see someone who's, I would say, has been inspired by the presence of Ronaldo." I said, "The greatest thing happened to your club since Cantona kicking a fan, he was my hero, was Ronaldo walking down the tunnel 2 weeks ago." He said, "What do you mean?" I think we did. I said, "Well, he's the best player in the world. Mm-hmm. He's got more money than anyone in your club. His body's better than anyone. His wife's better. He's got more kids." I said, "He's an incredible soul. There's a lady in your box who's been there more than anybody else. He's the nicest human being. So their opinion counts more than anything you've got to tell me at that moment." I said, "He has gone. He's watched, Rashford will have watched Ronaldo beyond the gym, beyond the diet. Watched him emotionally, not listening to anything. Goes onto the pitch, whole, performs. Struggling team, still got 20 goals.
Yeah.
Whole. If he doesn't tuck in there, yeah, I won't be doing that.
I'm not tracking that.
I'll see what I feel on the day and I'll still win you the game. Like, it's just all right. Rashford's getting bought in everything. I'm not judging him, that's most players. I said, he is now going, I'm in here, I'm strong, I'm doing me.
Yeah.
Let's watch the game. I guarantee there's a moment in the game today where there's probably some instructions from the bench and he will fuck all that off and do what he wants. He's looking at me, he's like, "Well, I just did it." I said, "Look, it's been great seeing you after Wrexham anyway." I'm thinking, well, he's never going to speak to me again. But that's So I go out to the game. It couldn't have been any better. It was 35 minutes. United wasn't great. It was 0-0, but United weren't great. And Rashford hadn't started particularly well. And Elland Road, obviously, the technical area is quite... I was sitting just behind the technical area and Ten Hag goes up to the edge of the technical area and Rashford comes over and he's instructing and pointing at Rashford and Rashford kind of walks. And you know because you've been there. You just know. Yeah, he's whatever. Not listening. Yeah. Walks past, picks a water bottle up, walks back to the pitch, turns his back to Ten Hag and's just sipping water. Walter Ten Hag and sees number 10 coming around the side of him and sipping his water, looking the other way. And then he just pops this water bottle and it spins over his head and crashes by in the technical area and he just bowls off into the middle of the pitch, right? I'm thinking, there it fucking is. You know, 62 minutes, Rashford, second half, comes into gear, scores a great header, and then it's just running riot, running amok. They win the game 2-0. Garnacho comes in. It's another one of the lads said to me at United, he's the one. He said, "Garnacho." He said, "All of this stuff you talk about, he's incredible. He's not listening to anything."
Yeah, you can see that.
Yeah, he said, he's got it. He's a proper player. It's one of the lads at United. He's probably the only one who's a proper United player. Anyway, so we're...
His idol's Ronaldo.
There we are. Yeah. And what did he do? He spent time with Ronaldo. Coming at half-time, having a cup of tea and cake. I said, "Did you see it?" "What?" I said, and he goes, "No, I didn't see it." I said, "Game's fucked, man," and just walk off. And he's like,
"Because you missed it. You missed the most important things."
And I know in my soul,
Andy Coulson is playing.
Is Andy Coulson?
No, no.
That's interesting you say that because I've been to watch a Man United game.
Last
this season, but last season I went. And I was lucky enough to go into the players' lounge.
Yes,
no players were in the players' lounge. None of their families, apart from one family, it was Garnacho's. They had like probably 6 or 7 people there.
Amazing.
And the way he came in after and interacted with his family was so nice. I'd heard these stories about him. He's arrogant, he's this, he's that. But he was like, the way he was hugging everyone, so grateful they've come. My little boy is like, "Can I have a picture?" And he was like, "Yeah, of course, no worries." And he just seemed like really, like you said, a bit whole, was comfortable with himself, really comfortable with himself. But
young lad, amazing.
Yeah, but he was only, 17, 18 this time? Yeah, when I was watching last season.
And what Ronaldo would have inspired those young kids with. But, you know, the manager's not strong enough to deal with any of that. Yeah. And ultimately, that's the truth, and he'll get sacked. Ten Hag will go this season for that reason. There is no ability to connect emotionally with the players. It's a tragedy because I wouldn't want that for him. He's a good man.
I think many managers can, though.
Klopp, Pep, Ange Postecoglou, a whole human being.
Joe Hart was on the podcast and he spoke about him so highly, didn't he?
Of course.
About that. And what did Joe say about his first conversation with him? It wasn't anything about it tactically or anything like that, was it?
I just want to feel at home. I want to feel like I belong somewhere.
Yeah.
And Ange just basically said to him, like, you will be my number one. Mm. You will be here. You'll be my number one. He said, from that moment, Joe just all of a sudden, because he'd been at Man City where he'd felt at home. Yeah. Obviously, Pep come in.
Of course,
He goes out and then he's bouncing from club to club, never really felt home. And then he just came up and said, look, Joe, we're lucky to have you. You're going to be my number one. Yeah. No one else will compare.
He said that initial meeting where he went to meet him, though, there was no talk about his last few years of his performances or anything like that. It was like, where are you at, Joe? What do you feel now? Do you still want to play? Do you still want to play? Do you still want to play? And Joe was like, Joe said, I'm not. Then Joe said to him, but I'm not. I've got these things. My kids have been moving around, all this sorts of stuff. But these are my non-negotiables. And he was like, brilliant, come play for me.
And do you know what? Look at the language you use. So Joe Hart said, I want to feel at home. Angela, how do you feel? It's feelings. Now, this is the gold dust. When we're numbing out our perfectionists, it's because we can't deal with the feelings. Mm-hmm. In an academy at 8, you're already feeling. You're feeling your son. Feeling I've got to be the best player, the judgment. And it's at that point, we either block our feelings out or we continue to feel. But we need to know how to deal with that.
Well, what's your thoughts on academy football then?
Look, I think it's been brilliant. If you look, I mean, my brother's been, he's the academy director at Luton and then Norwich and then gone to Bodo Glimt. Like he's spent his whole life. He's transformed academies. He's been brilliant. If we go back from my day and our days when you're coming through and there is no academy. So you can't say it's anything but good technically and tactically, but emotionally it's woeful, absolutely woeful.
You see that football in general, or that's not a
football in general. Football in general. But it's you're into a system. And we talk about systems, religion systems, school systems, family. You're into a system at 8. We better make damn sure that the people running that system are emotionally intelligent.
And you said you've written the framework for something within the PFA.
Well, I wrote the course 3 years ago because a friend of mine running academy said, why do all these players outsource their work to you? What are we not doing? And I said, well, you're not meeting their emotional needs. And he said, you must have a way of working. There must be like a journey you take players on. I said, not really, we just talk. And he said, there must be. And anyway, I reflected on it. I thought, there is. They come in, they're afraid or they're not performing. So we deal with fear and they're probably over-controlling. Then we've got to be vulnerable. And we look at ego. So there is. So I wrote these modules, 8 modules for leaders and coaches.
Hard to quantify that though, isn't it?
It was, but now it's been incredible because it is a proper journey from start to finish. And there's 30 questions each week. They're tough questions. I mean, we've just done toxic shame this week with these leaders, and there's 6-7 guys from America, soccer coaches, CEOs, MLS coaches, England. I had Eddie Boothroyd came on after he'd been sacked by England. He was incredible because there were some young coaches on there.
Sorry, Drew, is it like self-analysis or is it delivered?
Oh, sorry, so I deliver it on Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 2 hours a week on Zoom.
Right.
30 questions on Google Forms. We watch a bunch of videos, 3 or 4, 2-3 minute videos, and we just discuss. I guide it, but then I sit back on mute and people start opening up. But they're tough questions. I mean, I've had many people get to halfway and they just kind of don't, they come on, but they just, it's too much. Because it's not for everyone. Some people are like, I'm all right. But if you're serious about being a successful leader, you've got to do that work.
Is it too much because they can't go there emotionally?
They don't want to keep going into their soul like that.
Is it too much of like people going?
It's the fear of vulnerability. Isn't
it is. It's terrifying.
Leader in my school, like, you don't show your vulnerability. No. You just don't do it. You don't expose yourself. No. I don't do it. I would say do that to anyone. People say don't do it to your wives, do you?
No.
I think that's one of the least people you do it
100%.
To. I don't think you don't share like I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that. I'm just like, everything's all right, be all right.
I think sometimes that comes out of protecting people though, doesn't it? You want to protect people around you by taking it all on your own shoulders to make sure that they're not feeling it.
And there is an element of that. Like it's not, Brené Brown talks about, I use a lot of Brené Brown's content, she's incredible. But she talks about oversharing. You can overshare. It's not about like just crying uncontrollably all the time. It's about...
I better stop doing that.
Yeah, but it's just about... Vulnerability means the truth. That's what it means. It doesn't mean... So what's the truth? Yeah, I'm struggling.
I'm nervous.
All right, I'm nervous. I'm afraid. Don't think I'm good enough. Back hurt. All right, well, that's...
But not many men do that, do they?
Oof.
Well,
so that means,
well,
and not many women, but not many men. I mean,
exactly. Men in particular, though, isn't it? I mean, it's
provider, suicide, pride,
pride, suicide, egos, especially in football, where it's the most macho environment.
Do you know what's so hard for me? It's why I don't tend to go, want to be anywhere near any system clubs and stuff, because there's a massive push, mental health, and I know you talked about it, want to talk about it. There's a massive danger with the mental health movement on positivity, and it's toxic positivity for me. Let's just be positive here and a positive, you know, Southampton beat Birmingham at the weekend, and I was watching that game, and Wayne Rooney afterwards says, you know, there's loads of positives, I'm going to be positive, and you lost three in a bounce. Like, I don't know if there's positivity. I mean, we want to be positive, but let's sit in some truth here. Playing within ourselves, players look heavy, they're not passing to each other. We need to sit in that. And I think there's the psychology movement at the moment, mental health is all positivity. No one
create
wants to go...
Positive culture. I've said that to my staff, we're creating a positive culture.
Which we want. We want, but how do we get there? Yeah. And this is where Jordan Peterson, for me, is the one who shed the light more than anyone, because he talks about Carl Jung's work, and that's all the shadow work. Yeah. And that's where I go, really, is the darkness, the truth. So you know, we go here first. So you sit with the player, you're not performing, you're not happy, you're affecting every area of your life, manager doesn't believe in you, you've gone mentally. We want to get to a point that's unbelievably positive. You're playing well, the money's coming in, we need to go here. How you feeling? I'm on my fucking knees. All right, let's go into that for as long as we need to go in.
And when you do go into that, Drew, like this is the big word for me, and like I use this in my business, accountability. Oof. At some point, no matter how far you delve down that sort of cul-de-sac, if you like, you're going to end up getting to the point where you've actually got to step up and take charge, regardless of what it looks like, whether 100%. It's emotionally, 100%. Whether it be, you know, responsibility-wise. And I always say, like, accountability brings opportunity.
Mm.
So it's like, for me, that's where I think there's probably, in society at the moment, there's a lot of people who are just so scared of having accountability, because 100%. Then, you know, that starts putting things on your shoulders. Mm. So they start to get away from that. And that's for me, where a lot of it stems from.
Well, you're spot on. And the sweat and courage thing is the accountability for me. But there is... we have to go into where we are right now. And we're aiming for the accountability. And I think because people talk about accountability, people can't get there. They don't know.
No.
Brené Brown says that vulnerability is the door to courage. You can't get to courage without vulnerability. You can't get
and
there.
Are we going full circle now, back round to sort of where you were when you were a kid, what you know, the culture that you lived in, the environment, what you were taught, what's in your subconscious? Is that now coming back full circle to what we spoke about, do you think?
Yeah, maybe. I just think, but mental health for me is not about mental, and that's why the needle is not moving enough. It's emotional and spiritual health. It starts here, and this improves because I can't stop thinking. Mm-hmm. I can't stop the thoughts. They're going to be there. That's a spiritual. We're now going, I need to get out. I need to recognize the thoughts, understand I'm not my thoughts, and now level my
detach.
Yeah. Some tools for detachment of the ice and some stuff. They're tools. That's all they are to stay detached. Because I only work 24 hours at a time. Because enough information they could detach me for tomorrow. So the 1, 2, 3 is VASC. I call it vulnerability, acceptance, sweat, and courage is the accountability. So I'm sitting with a footballer and say, "You better fucking run. I need your running stats. You need to be off the scale." I've sat with a young lad at Liverpool when Klopp first came in. And his running stats were down. Klopp played him 10 times in the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks. But he was bottom half, average of the group, winger. And I said to him, who covers the most distance? At the time, it was Milner and Lallana, give or take. I said, need to be up alongside them, beating them or at least next to them. So I was watching him in the 23s. Alexander-Arnold was in the 23s at the time. And Alexander-Arnold was up and down like a horse. I said, I'm winger, when do I go? I said, you just go everywhere. I said, it's easy. You've got a manager who, that's all he wants. Yeah, yeah. Just run. So if we can get the sweat up, and now you've got to have courage, you've got to take the ball, put your studs on it, invite the press. You're so good, technically. You can roll out of anything. I didn't have that. You can do that. But that's courage. At the moment, you're popping it off, and it's all nice, but it's bullshit. Put your studs on the ball, front some up and beat someone. You know, you're looking at me, you're a winger. Now he started to get those things. Klopp went from calling him number, whatever he was, 46, to his surname, to his first name, puts him in the team. That's the accountability. But we couldn't get there without him saying, I'm terrified. I'm up at 3 in the morning watching videos of Ronaldinho in my bed, and he started tearing. Good, keep going. you've got to get all this out. Now we move through it. Jordan Peterson says that to get what you most want to find is where you least want to look. So that's the stories of dragons and gold. Like the dragon sits on the gold. To get the gold, you need to go walk into the dragon's lair. That's this whole shadow, Carl Jung, darkness, everything in the psychological movements, avoiding all of that. I see seminars, I've fallen out with enough people on LinkedIn, running well-being at this club, that we're great day today, it was all smiley, and four players in here want to kill themselves. Can we just get honest here? Four players in here who hate their lives, who are terrified of not getting a contract. Can we just go there for a minute? No, no, it's just been positive. We've done a, do you know? But I don't blame the people. It's because they haven't done that work on themselves.
The reason I talk about...
And there's
about
a genuine care to help people. I'm not knocking...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's not coming from a bad place, is it? No. It's trying to...
I'm sharing that I am having more success than any of these people, and it's not because I'm special.
Yeah.
It's because I've done this work and I'm trying to hand it back, that we have to go in there. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I asked about the, obviously going back to your childhood, because my best mate, unfortunately, took his own life about 12 years ago. And then I look at the parallels of us, and I, obviously you spend loads of time, don't you, going
analysing it all,
what's gone on here, right, how, like, what could I have done, and all of the above. And then you look at, actually, like, he was very a middle class kid. I was very much like your typical council estate kid, and then I was very much like made accountable, where he was a little bit of a closed book, and parents would be a little bit, because I suppose because they had the ability to sort of give him what he wanted, not necessarily what he needed, but more what he wanted whenever he wanted it. I had to sort of work harder for that. Then I was challenged more emotionally and he wasn't. So just come around to that, because it sort of all fits in place for me, you know, like when he was a closed book and then, you know, he had everything, it's seemingly good looking.
And also what you've just said there is probably the most profound thing. As a parent, they've created the environment. We do. As parents, we go, we've suffered to get there, to get the money to have a mortgage, to have a house. We want it to be a little easier for them. And that's what they've done.
And he had a wonderful upbringing and all of the above. And it was more so...
It's too safe.
It comes down to his accountability of, like, being given the things he needs and wants and then taking that for granted a little bit. And I know that's actually quite hard to say.
But it's the truth. It's a global truth. That's a truth that's on mass. Yeah. And you know, when I've... Again, you know, my kids are spoiled. We've got a lovely house. They've got iPads. But sometimes my... wife said, I think that was too much. She said, it's not too fucking much. My daughter the other day, she dances every day. She's 12. And one Saturday morning, she was pissing around. She was going to be late. And I said, come on, we're going. We're going to be late. You'll be there early. And I don't want to go today. I walked in and I said, you told me you want to be a dancer? You're never going to be a fucking dancer. You will never dance. Get your head together now. That dream's over. And I slammed the door. Wife's outside going, too much. She said, a little bit. I was like, fucking hell. That was too much.
We've all been there, though. But in that moment,
I'm going... This isn't the truth right now. So we're middle class, but I haven't forgotten. I can't forget what it takes. And I'm only ever one day from losing everything, because I don't have contracts.
That is the constant battle with your kids, isn't it?
It is. And I went in and cuddled her, and I went, honey, I'm really sorry, but I, you know, daddy was a footballer, I lost everything. She knows all my stuff. She's read my book. I said, this world will beat you up quick. Like, you want to be a dancer. There's kids in China, Russia, who are going to be dancing till their feet are bleeding. Now, you've got to be at it. And that's the sweat bit, right? Yeah. But no one ever gets this right. I feel so, the guy, I speak to the players sometimes, and one of the lads said, I don't ever get a private jet. It was international break. There was tickets had all gone for first class Dubai. I've got three kids, and I'm not going to go in there. As a Premier League player, you can't really go in there. You can't. That's just the truth. Yeah. And he's like, I've got a fucking jet. He said, I've never done it. Hired this plane. Kids are getting on. I've gone on. Daughter's seven. She's sitting at the back making gang signs at me with shades on her baseball cap. I switched. Fucking switched. I said, dragged her cap off, you sit down there, who do you think you are? He said, but really, you're right. I just thought, this isn't the truth. I came from a council estate. This is not it. But it's hard.
Imposter syndrome.
It happens so all the time that you become soft, but you want them to have that edge. You want them to be. You want them to be tough and nasty.
But then we overprovide for them.
Then they're asking.
But I think that's how you do it. That's why. Look, at the end of the day, Jurgen Klopp and Pep, Man City are running like lunatics. They've won the quadruple, and they're all billionaires, millionaires. So you can do it. I call it healthy fear. And when I go into work with cultures, we have to create healthy fear. In football, there's unhealthy fear everywhere. Can't make mistakes. Healthy fear is, if you don't go to this practice, you should be damn scared of not making a dancer. But I'm not going to shame you, nail you, humiliate you. No. But let's get real here. That fear should be on you. We have a fear. You guys have fear of your business. I have fear every day. It's healthy fear, you know.
Yeah,
I think it's a good thing.
It is. That's healthy.
That sometimes when I speak to my boy, I'm like, you've been taught to get a bit stronger because you're thin. Like, if you want to get a bit stronger, you're gonna have to put a bit of work in.
You do some press ups. Need to do some squats.
Do some press ups.
Improve your diet.
Do 100 press ups if you're not doing them. Guess what? Yeah. Guess what? You won't play.
And that's making him accountable.
100%.
Accountable. And that's what you do press ups, and you got a hell of a chance. I'm not saying you will, but got a hell of a chance.
And I think that's why this stuff. I had a coach recently. One of the coaches did my boot camp. He's now managing. Anyway, an agent rang me. A player had gone to sign for him, and he got down there and he changed the contract and fucked him around. This guy's done my course. Fucking hell. So I rang this. Hey, Drew, I said, tell me this didn't happen today. Yeah, but what it was, I said, the fuck's happened? Like, you did my course. He come on the phone to me, and I just thought, oh God, he's all back in the ego. He's in the job now. The fear's gripped him. Yeah. He's in back into all the old behaviours. Not judging. I said, this is just a tragedy. Oh, all your fluffy bullshit, he said to me. I went, oh man. I said, look, I respect your opinion. I wish you well. And fuck. But this is what reminds me again. It's so easy to slip back. Once you,
easy,
it's all right when you're out of work. Yeah. You're not in the technical area. It's all okay.
And you can sit back and you can look at the worldwide view. But when you're in the mix,
you get in the technical area, and you've lost two on the bounce, and you're back into over control again. And yeah, they haven't been doing great. So,
and is it
not fluffy? This stuff we're talking about, the highest level of accountability. Is, yeah. We all are. But is emotions fluffy?
So we're saying sweat and courage, like you say, is really accountability.
Philosophy for my life.
Yeah,
everything.
Of course. But then. When we're talking about that accountability, like you've just said there, is it immediate gratification of like when they're in it, are they looking for a shortcut to that accountability? Whereas what you're saying is like, we'll sit down, we'll have a conversation, we'll understand needs and spirituality. But when they're in it and they need those 3 points because they've lost two on the bounce, do they need a shortcut to that accountability? And their way of doing it is going, well, you will fucking run and you will do that.
They're in the dark emotionally at that point. What happens, and I've seen it with business owners, I've sat with them, I've worked with one guy now, so good, and he's so aware. He said, you know, we've been down this last quarter. It's a big business in London. I'm in there every Wednesday. He said, we're down this last two quarters. He said, no. Sat with the bank rings, and because that's what I said. Is that what happens, the bank rings at your level of business? He said, yeah, because we've got millions floated on an overdraft and they need to see the business plans being met. I was like, shit. So they start just going, oh, everything okay here? And that means they're just, you miss one quarter. I'm like, shit.
You're like that, Dave, aren't you?
Yeah, it's not me. So he's like, and I can feel the need in me to call a meeting with a team, grip hold of the wheel, nail a few people. Work ethic's not there. It's all there this morning. He said, I sat, I did my stuff, we're at gratitude, and I went, no, they're all working hard enough, they're good people. This is just hang in and make sure they need support. And that's the ultimate level. Otherwise, you're straight back in, they're lazy. I see all the people at the moment coming out about United players, they're all, the players need to do more, and what are they talking about? Like, I got relegated two or three times. I couldn't have done any more. I was working my socks off. I was doing all this. It's not conscious. I need someone to free me up from the fear.
Yeah, you're not going on there.
You need to do the backdrop thing.
You're not going on there. You're not and purposefully you're not working hard. You're doing everything that you think you do. You're going in the gym more. You're working your harder. You're like, right, I'm going to practice more crossing. I'm going to do more shots. I'm going to do more pull-ups on the pull-up bar.
So you're straight into over control.
Yeah. So you're trying to do more and more because you're thinking that, well, what can I do? What can I do?
And at that point, it's less and less. Yeah. We need to lift the fear. We need to go back to being the children. We need to accept we can't win. We've lost four on the bounce. We might make it five, but we're good. Good spirit with good players.
And you always played better, didn't you? With them, you had always. That. I think sometimes I like it. You know, again, I tell you when I liked it, when I played it, if you were losing 2-0, because suddenly then, you're losing 2-0. Like, you've got nothing to lose. Give me the ball.
Can all play it 2-0 down.
And you play in some ways, it's easier. It's harder when you're 1-0 up to take the ball on the halfway line because you're 1-0 up at 10
minutes. And this is where you go to these top people. Man City, Man United got to win every game.
Yeah. Going into dangerous areas on the pitch and getting on the ball.
Elite mentality.
Yeah. One mistake and it can be a goal, but knowing it's the right thing to do.
How many people have got that, though? How many players have got that? Is that just the top? Is that just the top ones? Is there players in lower league who've got that but haven't got the ability?
No, I don't buy any of that bullshit. The old ability down the lower league. What's he talking about? You see all these guys train. They can do everything. You see lads in training who are brilliant. It's nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with the ability. I don't buy any of that. They're just frozen. They're just screwed in their heads. Yeah, they've lost themselves.
You see so many players. Single club you've been to, you think you're the best trainer every day, but you just can't do it on a Saturday. And that is all, obviously.
Paul Lynch looking at me going, what are you doing at this level? Because well, this.
Because
can't get out of my head.
Emotionally.
Slip into over control because I can't deal with my feelings. I don't even know what they are. So now I'm thinking, well, if I get in before everyone else, if I foam roll, eat perfectly, but you're still shit.
And that's the difference between you, see, between you and Bellamy. Bellamy was able to be authentic. I mean, it's not not care, but like...
It's healthy. He had a healthy disrespect. But hanging...
Like, not you're telling me. I don't agree with that.
But he did a podcast
it.
with Tubes lately on that. That's that goal form where they walk and play. Yeah, and it was fat. He was very honest. And he says, my whole career has lived on sleeping tablets. Chronic anxiety, crippling anxiety. It's powerful.
So he did have...
He said, but my way of dealing that was just block it all out. Now, you can do that. If you can do that, you're going to have to use stuff. Drink,
do you,
women.
Do you feel like for Bellas, for instance, he... On the football pitches where he could just be free or anything like that. Do you buy into that? A lot of people talk about that.
I think when you've got that level of drive, I wouldn't have thought you're free on the pitch because that's where his whole life's built around that being 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
So I think what they go into is a level of, what do you do with that? When you have that desire, what do you do with it? You either numb it out, which I think he did, sleeping tablets, snooze, all the stuff, and just crack on. I couldn't numb it out because the numbing out, I wasn't brought up that way. I'm a model pro. You train harder. You don't numb out. You don't go out gambling and drinking and smoking. And if you look at these top boys, look at the Beckham thing recently.
Yeah.
They go to Real Madrid and the old Ronaldo, he starts laughing. He said, Capello came in and, yeah, it's his rules. He said, we don't do any of that here. Yeah. He just said, we don't do any of that here. And just rocked back in his seat and he's like, and then he went straight to the restaurant. They're all there and the wine's out and... That's all good. We've got to sit down and we'll be there at match day. And I think that's the difference with the top boys. They're not going down that road.
You go 1-0, 2-0 down this end.
Yeah, we're all good. But people think that's because they're great players. Yes, they're technically really good, but it's emotionally they're exceptional.
Yeah.
Technically they're good, emotionally exceptional. Taking the ball everywhere, risking.
Yeah, fabulous.
So if you're the manager, you're encouraging all that. You're
You have to be it.
You're letting De Bruyne, like Pep... De Bruyne shouts at you. Yeah, I'm going to get that because he's Kevin De Bruyne. And if I want Kevin De Bruyne on my team, the reason why he's a great, amazing player is because he wants to do his own thing. So I
can you have like, 11, yeah, yeah. Can you have 11, play, 11 players doing that though, or do you need the one
big enough character?
Let's look at. I don't think it's can you. It's have you got 11 players? Look at Man United in their best. Right, let's go. Schmeichel's going to do that.
Yeah.
You go through the back four, your big centre, Stam's not taking any hassle. Evra's going to have a go.
Yeah.
Neville, maybe not so much. Yeah. Into the midfield, Keane, Ince, they're coming at you.
Yeah.
You know, your front line, Hughes, Cantona, they're having it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you've probably got 8 or 9 who are not taking any of that.
Yeah.
So individuals, men in themselves.
You need to be huge in yourself. Yeah. You need to have a handle on your ego, a handle on your fear, and you need to somehow manage it. But if the minute
I
you start,
I'm thinking they're probably more lower league because that's sort of the levels. Never really played for a top.
Oh, me too.
But I'm just thinking that from a manager's point of view, you need to sort of have a balance. Not a balance. I totally agree. That's where the best players come from. But do you need 5 or 6 players on the pitch who are gonna stick to structure and be enough just to stay in the game?
But it's not. It's a really brilliant point because people in my course, this always ends up a subject for half an hour.
Yeah.
Can you have 11? I said, but what we're asking for whole humans. We're not asking for disrespectful humans. Whole ones. So is my fullback whole? Is he aware of his fear? Is he aware of his? I'm going to play safe. So we've got to be careful with discipline. Is that now conforming and safety? I've told you this. I want you playing this.
But you wouldn't play.
I want to trust him.
You need to be able to trust him. You want to play with discipline. I don't want him to wander off on the right.
No, but then surely it comes a point where going, he's a good player. He's not stupid. He understands there's a time to go. But we're going, there's a time to go. Let him be. He'll understand that.
And everyone, we'd have all been through this. Our best games, I guarantee you, in all our careers, was instinctive.
Oh,
was playing
when
free.
Well.
You do things that you've.
Like I said, when Tony Adams spoke to me about my best spell and they were looking at me, hat trick. Drunk. So what does alcohol do? We all know what alcohol does. Why it's the biggest drug in the world. Takes the edge off. Gives us more confidence. We've got the fuck it mentality with a few drinks in us. Well then, so but how do we get that while still being a great pro? And that's what the best do. Yeah. Mo Salah's sweat will be incredible. His discipline's incredible. His body shape's incredible. His training's incredible. That's all 9, 10 out of 10. And so's his courage. That's why he's the elite player.
I see.
But most players, all the young ones are doing all the Mo Salah training. You can watch all Mo Salah's training on YouTube. You can get all the physical stuff now. It's all there. Don't get any of the emotional stuff, which I guess is why my stuff's been intriguing to people.
Fascinating.
Because no one talks about this side. because I had all this and it doesn't fucking work.
I'd love to be 21 again.
Me too.
Oh my God. Well, I think that's the key, isn't it? Because
you're what we're trying to do.
You were fearful. I remember training with Sunderland as a young lad, and you're worried because I'm going, oh my God, like flipping. I've got like Lee Clark here, and I've got Kevin Phillips here, and I've got Niall Quinn
tough
here.
Characters.
I'm doing head tennis, and I'm Peter Reed's partner in head. I remember we had a draw. I was Peter Reed's partner in head tennis, and I'm thinking, I am. Do not want Peter Reed as my partner. Yeah. He's like, you better be ready for this, son. Mm. And like me and him are like against another two people.
To a point where you wouldn't want to
train. Because you're within yourself. Because I'm, and like, I've got to do the half volley to start the game. And I'm like,
I've never seen you do a half volley.
But you grip with fear. So you don't even strike it right.
If you're emotionally aware of yourself at that point as the leader, mm-hmm. you go, Sammy, I know you'll be shitting yourself because you're playing with the gaffer. Don't worry, man. I used to be terrible in these, hitting the net. And
amazing.
It's going to have a good time.
If he'd said that to me...
But do you know what Peter Reed's doing at that time unconsciously? Denying that he ever had fear. Yeah. So when Chris Sutton turns on me at Lincoln, I don't blame Chris. Chris is unconscious. He's acting like he never had fear in his career. I got it all sorted. Hang on a minute here, mate. You went to Chelsea for however much. That didn't work out. Yeah. What went on in that mirror? How dark did it get?
There's no truth
to any of this stuff. And I think, again, I think what's helped me have this message is people did see me as tough. But what does that mean? It's not tough. I'm just blocked and have got this complete act going on around me. Yeah. Inside, I'm broken. And that's why all these ex-players are broken. They're all broken. Let's get it right here. You have to take a divorce rate, the PFA show out, and all this stuff, the bankruptcy rate, the addiction rate. Because it's all feelings. They've all blocked them out. And I'm Mr. Tough. I've got everything sorted. And have you?
Yeah.
I feel like we've got, like... at Brackley, we've got like a real good balance in terms
manager
of
Brackley.
Yeah, it's a Brackley in Conference North.
Yeah,
we have a really tough league. But we've got a really good balance. Like, I think I've got a really good relationship with the players. You know, like you say, just there emotionally, I think they're all tuned in to what it is that we're doing.
Well, you're on this podcast, so you must believe in all of this stuff.
Yeah, and I think they get it as well. I think, and again,
speak to them though. Do you see how they're feeling?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'll speak to them collectively. I'll speak to them individually. And I think as well, just like what you were saying there, sometimes I always do this like this grip when I hug them. I always do my like jiu-jitsu grip there, and I just pull them in just so they know that I mean
I feel this.
And we always shake hands when they come in. We always shake hands. And they lead it now. Mm. They lead it. And then they're all in it together. And, you know, we've got a missed fixture this weekend. So I'm thinking about what can I do with them. I've obviously got to go and watch a fixture after training in the morning. But in between, can I get us together for some lunch? Can that be a little bit of a treat on my side? And then...
It can't be forced,
and that's what I mean. We don't do it very often, but then equally, we're just talking about structure within a team. You know, so I talk a little bit about to get the edge on the opposition. Right, we do things where we can predict the future. So we know when the ball's on the right hand side without giving too much away. We play around in three, switch around in two.
Yeah.
We know how we're going to do that. We're going to balance off on a angle and support, compact and depth.
From a tactical point of view,
loads of the tactical stuff. But then it's like what I say to him is, listen, this is our team. This is our collective identity. So. Something that we spoke about before is like, please speak openly. And it's going to take a lot of courage that we speak about. Speak openly, because if there's anything, if you're unsure about our identity or you disagree with our identity, the time's to speak about it now. And right across the board, I've had complete buy-in. And then one lad who I've brought in pulled me last night and just said, I don't fit into the way we play. I feel like I can't be myself. Don't have too many touches. And I knew... Obviously, from past experience, he's thinking to himself, I'm going to get hammered here by the gaffer. And I just went, well, first of all, can I just say thanks for coming to see me?
Amazing.
Being honest.
Amazing. Yeah.
Thanks for just... And do you know what? You've said there about your happiness is the most important to you. Football aside, we won't get in the way of your happiness. So if you need to find somewhere, obviously, it's got to be the club can't sell you to our rivals or anything like that. But if you need to go, you need to go. And thanks for giving me the heads up, because we can make this work for us all. And he's just done it in the right way. But then... With my team, I know there's complete buy-in, but we do need to have a team approach. We do need to sort of all understand. And then what I say to him is, my job is to get you into areas where you can express yourself. But those areas have got to be more frequent, and that's the role I play. And I think they get buy-in, but I just feel like there's got to be that little bit of structure in there.
Of course, it's not structureless. I mean, this is the beauty of... You know, I certainly won't be sharing what I do, but if you look at the work at Southampton and why Russell and I...
He's all on structure, isn't he? The
way
he plays in terms of...
But Russ is a guy, again, going back to who you are, he's got a huge moral fibre. You speak to lads when he was captain of Norwich, he was pushing the green movement and holding standards at Norwich. He's a really good man. He's a good human with a strong sense of self, strong moral compass, feels things emotionally, and technically very, very intelligent. that's the only that's why I'm there. I mean, I'm not really interested.
He's a good man.
He's a good man, and so these conversations we can have with him, with the player. I wouldn't be interested in working at a club. I don't. There's no value to me working at a club, and because my job, what's paid the bills the last 10 years, undoing. This is the truth. Undoing all the work of the coaches.
That's mad, isn't it?
That's what's paid my bills. You can nail me. You can message me on the line. That's just the truth. What do you want me to do? I tell you, that's what it is. Why else are they paying me?
For the vast majority of coaches, waste of time.
Again, I don't want to say waste of time.
They don't understand
emotionally what it is. So they're either amazing on the tactical side and technical side. There's no connection. Russell has both, and I think he can be an exceptional coach. I am there, like I'm in London. The owner of the business has got both sides in business. I'm just there to. They describe it to me as you keep the wheels moving. I know you'll have had 7 one-to-ones with my lads around the training ground. Yeah. Some we go for a walk. Some we have a coffee by the boot room. I know that's seven guys that you've freed up 10-20% for me to do my stuff with.
But that's brave from the manager, because...
Unbelievably brave.
Managers go, right, do I want this person 100%. Speaking to 7 or 8 of my lads one-to-one? And he's teaching them healthy disrespect and all that thing.
But you don't need to teach healthy disrespect, because there's nothing to disrespect when the leader's in the same way. That's why I wouldn't walk at work at most clubs. Yeah. There's no point.
It's a hard for what you do, especially 10 years ago when I was playing. Mm. It's a hard job to go in and try and implement that, because it's a massive... When you're in a big group, it's almost like, no, I'm fine. What's that all about? And whenever we had psychologists come in at Wolves, at Reading, at Shrewsbury, as a group, it never worked.
No.
But the ones who were maybe enlightened enough would then just go and grab them afterwards and have a chat. But in a group, I didn't ever felt like it worked.
Well, so you wouldn't show you were vulnerable.
But how is it now, though?
Again, because I'd experienced all that.
Yeah.
I knew exactly. So whenever I go in a place, I absolutely destroy myself for the first 10 minutes. Yeah. And what you see is lads going... The fuck is this? Yeah. I'm looking at you, and you're going. They're going. This is different
in a group scenario.
Always, whenever I go anywhere,
you
I have
know
to
what
get
them lads are thinking. You are coming in. They're sitting there like that. They're on their phones. They're going.
Well, because that was me.
Yeah.
And I get bored, especially when I'm a senior pro. I'm like, here we go again.
Yeah.
These clowns coming in here today. That's what I would be like.
Yeah.
So I start saying things like that, and I said, look, lads, there's not one part of me that wants to be here. To be honest, I fucking hate football. Hate everyone in it. Drove me to rehab, cost me everything in my life. Don't like the industry. I said, well, what breaks my heart is you lads not earning the money you should have, not playing, not coming off the pitch going, that was me today. And that depression that you will be fucking in when you leave the training ground in your car to your wife with your kids when you're not present, I won't wish that on my worst fucking enemy. Now all of a sudden you go, Jesus, what? There's buy-in. Then... Yeah, then I'll have some time with Drew, but we don't go in a room. I've never done that at any of the clubs. I don't go and sit. I'll sit in the corner of the canteen. So it's like, it's not always with the psychologist. Drew's one of the coaching staff. Yeah. And we talk about shit. It's not because I've got psychological problems. It's because I'm like, crossing that white line's fucking horrendous. It's the hardest thing to do. Yeah. This is not, we're not coming off. And you can talk about whatever you want with me, all of it, because I've been everywhere. But
do you have to have a level of what you say to me doesn't go anywhere else?
Do I will always say,
know that.
You so one, go back to well, no. What, one thing I say is, look, guys, and again, I say it in my initial thing, wherever I've been, it's been the same in the business world. My experience of external people coming in, you share stuff with them, it goes back to the manager, and you're thrown under the bus, you're dropped.
Yeah.
The minute that happens, I'll punch him in the face and I'll fucking leave. Yeah. That won't be happening here. The only reason I'm here is because you've got a leader who genuinely wants this stuff and wants the truth, wants to be better as a man and wants you to flourish in your life emotionally and have a full life. And he's reiterating that message. So it's in all of our interests that you tell me, I get a bit fed, I don't feel confident in this structure. And he's going to go, shit, I want him to be confident. Let's have. I was thinking about your point. I've had this at other clubs. A lot of the time with the individual, what he's really saying is, I don't feel I can perform and get my results selfishly playing in this discipline. So now we have to have a conversation. Now he has to share that with me. I have to share that back. And the leader has to go, how do I help you inside this discipline still be successful? Because there has to be some kind of structure. But yeah, so I think, again, that's why I wouldn't go into most places. Because the minute the leader is going to throw him under the bus, I'm done. I don't want to be here. Yeah. The minute he can't go, shit, I want to help him too. We're all here to help him. end goal is the team wins and it wins wholly. I call about whole winning. And this is why I love what Southampton are trying to do, what Russell's trying to do. It is like Manchester City. And Russell said this openly, I'm not telling secrets. He gets nailed by people in the game. This is a guy who captained in the Premier League, played for his country. He gets destroyed by coach in the game, the LMA and academy football. Who does he think he is? It's bullshit. We can all pass the ball. We can all take a touch on the ball. We can all move the ball, all players, especially at that level. It's not academy football is that without responsibility and fear. So we need to go, no, we'll play like that, but with the heightened fear and heightened responsibility. That's possible. The reason all the other coaches nail it is because they can't emotionally free the players up to do it. All these players are good enough to do that. I'd say they're good enough in League Two to do that, to be honest with you. Certainly gets a Championship, Premier League level. They can all do that. Can all take the ball and pass it for God. He's taking a piss. I mean, centre half can't put his studs on the ball on the edge of the box and go, cool, what passes on? That one, that one, that one. Of course he can.
Yeah.
Who do you admire then? Who do you admire in football? Which footballers? Which ones do you think? Obviously Ronaldo, you mentioned. Who's got it right? Mo Salah's got it right.
All of the best. Well, how can you, anyone who's performing at the top consistently? Because to do something consistent.
Haaland's
phenomenal. Haaland's phenomenal. But again, what does he talk about? Meditation. Yeah. Or his goal celebrations, meditation. Yeah. What is meditation? Silence the noise and pressure. Get into my instincts. Strong sense of self, uncompromising. Now, let's not see if you know what you're looking for a bit with the Rashford comment. Early on, there was the clip, wasn't there? Early on, and City came off for a game, and Pep went to hug him on the touchline, which he's a big guy, he's like 6'5. Yeah. So he's up to his, and he almost walked through him, he almost carried and kept walking. He's like, I'm not going to sit and fucking talk to you, I'm going. You'd only know that if you know. Yeah. He wasn't sitting there going, what do you think of my performance, Gaffer? He's like, I don't give a fuck about
him. Always arguing.
Interested. He's like, fuck.
Loves it.
To have them people, if you want the best players, that's what's coming with them.
I always say to the coaches, you should have to work so hard to get him to listen to one word you've got to fucking say. If you want to be a top coach, you should see that as so hard. Your initials, they're worthless. Car worthless, career worthless, all waste of time. To get him to buy in, you need to connect with them top ones.
And they need to be authentic, the managers, because if it's bollocks, you just see through
them.
They'll
see through it because that's why they're so good, because they know who they are.
He's wasting his time. He's insecure. Yeah. He doesn't believe in it. Forget him.
So I think all of these top boys, you just see it. You can see it on the field. They're just...
Yeah.
They're whole. This is not rocket science.
Bellingham, obviously, perfect.
Unbelievable. He's not exceptional technically. He's not exceptional physically. He's not exceptional speed. He's exceptional. He's just completely whole. There's no doubt coming into him. He's got no doubt. People talk about self-belief. I don't believe in self-belief. Self-be. You don't have to believe in yourself as a four-year-old, do you? You have to just be yourself. But they've never stopped being. So by the time he gets to 20, he's so whole.
Jude Bellingham's been himself. He played within the structure a little bit.
What's
he
even mean? Play within a structure. Just give me a shirt, mate. I've got it. So I know when to track back. I know when to go up there. I know when to help him.
Wayne Rooney. That sort of.
And there's another one.
Yeah. The only thing I worry about is I hope they won't, because you have Messi, Ronaldo, Mo Salah. They carry on, but you see a lot of talent at a young age where it gets knocked out of them, doesn't it?
Dele Alli was a huge one. I didn't agree with people in the interview. People jump straight onto the interview with the mental health one and talk about the abuse of a child. Horrendous stuff. We all know that. Horrific. And I've said this to lads, and we all agree on the same thing. Yeah, but he's been playing for 9 years at the top with all of that.
Yeah.
He came into the Milton Keynes when I was leaving as a senior player. He was already 14 training with the first team, taking the piss out of everyone.
That was my view as well.
He was already taking. So he already carried that for 9 years. No, what's happened is Mourinho created doubt. Next one, you're too loose. You go here, stop doing that. You go out too much. If people start, what's left at the end of that?
You start questioning it.
And now you've got nothing left.
Would you have loved to work with someone like Dele Alli? You think you could, not so much now, but 3-4 years ago when you're starting to dip.
Yeah. I never think about loving. I mean, I've been blessed to work with some incredible guys. It's just, I just think what frightens, it's nothing frighten me, I understand it. We need to make sure this stuff's really easy. It's really easy, and simplicity is genius, they say, don't they?
Yeah.
Simplicity, it is simple.
How are you feeling?
Beyond how you're feeling, because if Jurgen Klopp said it, if you're going to manage and lead this way, you've got to be prepared to answer anything. So if I'm going to ask someone how they're feeling and they say to me, to be honest with you, I'm on my fucking knees and I don't like you. Wow, that hurts. But I understand that. I've been there before. Now we can have a conversation. So it's, I think the old one of some need a pat on the ass, some need a kick up. What does that all mean? It's all nonsense, isn't it? There's not a human being. We all need love.
Yeah.
We all need to feel valued and loved and whole and free. And there's an accountability that if you don't run, that's why I love Pep. When he came in and he said to Aguero, and they dropped Aguero for 2.5 months at the start, 10 weeks didn't play him. And he was asked about it. He said, if you don't run, you don't play. It's just simple. And he was smiling. He said, it's just simple.
Yeah, run.
And so there's no shouting, belittling, humiliating. So there's a stand, there's the accountability.
That's how much far you need to run.
That's
and that's been the best leaders who can do that.
I know a few players, isn't he, Pep, as well, where they come in, they don't play for the first 3 or 4 months, and they just kind of drips them in until they're ready to know what he expects from them.
And then you notice that sometimes they go in, they have like a huge amount of success, and then they just come out and drips them back in again. I mean, that's the bit that I find incredible.
But they
want to stay.
It is, but I always fight that a little bit. Like, well, I'll tell you why. Because it doesn't happen to De Bruyne. It doesn't happen to Edison. It doesn't happen to Rodri. Yeah. So you go, well, why? Oh, they're much better. What does that mean? They're all top players. I just think those ones, that core, they are unwavering. Yeah. The form dips in others because the head dips and they question themselves.
Yeah. Like Phil Foden's got as much talent as De Bruyne,
isn't he? But he's bouncing, but he's emotionally and mentally bouncing up and down. Grealish was bouncing up and down. He's found some rhythm.
Yeah.
But because these top boys, we go back to De Bruyne, the truth is, you can give me a structure and I'll pick and choose from that, thanks.
Yeah.
There's no way De Bruyne is just staying tight in that structure. No chance.
It's like you, mate, wasn't it?
You know what's mental, though? We talked about that. I remember Steve Agnew when I was like 18 at Sunderland, and I was just like direct and running at people. And Steve Agnew, I remember saying, don't ever lose that. Don't ever lose that. But you do. As a kid, you do, because you coach and you become professional and you start playing and you start overthinking it. Just like, play. It
becomes a job.
How do you do it, though?
Like, completely.
It's been fascinating.
Mate, that's amazing. Fascinating.
Yeah. Just finish off with some of your quotes here. So, your ego will destroy you. Driving a positive culture is nonsense. Dangerous pursuit of positivity and happiness. Winning is easy. Remaining 100% in sweat and courage is another thing. Mm-hmm. Authenticity takes the greatest courage and requires absolute vulnerability. Mm. In football, there's no growth spirituality and emotionally.
Here's gone. Your ego will destroy you. Talk us through that.
Well, I think we've gone through them all. I just wanted to list them because
they're powerful statements.
Yeah.
So stick by all them. Powerful.
Yeah. Ego is the opposite of self. Be yourself. It will destroy you if you start being anything other. What's the next one?
Driving a positive culture is nonsense.
Well, yeah, it's only nonsense if you don't go into all the darkness.
Dangerous.
So I had a clip the other day with a coach going, "Be confident today. Loads of reasons to be confident." I paused him. "What are you talking about? No reasons to be confident there. If you don't win, you're fucking sacked. If you don't score, you're dropped. If you drop the ball, you're dropped. We just let's go there 5 minutes. We're all terrified, but we're looking to cross the white line and go, let's go.
So let's do it.
So it's all this toxic. Let's just be going. So what is it all? It's all nonsense. You're bypassing truth all the time. Truth is, we're fucking terrified here, but we're ready to go.
Well, mate, it's been an incredible podcast. I think our listeners are going to be buzzing after that.
We're going for a few pints. We'll pick that.
Asked Drew about his five-a-side team.
Yes.
Pretty quickly.
I've played with.
Yeah. And give us the reasons why. And think about those people who are free and...
Bellamy, obviously, because it's just exceptional.
He's up top then,
Yeah.
What sort of formation are you going to go with here, Drew?
I don't know,
mate.
Who's a keeper who you've respected, who you thought mentally he's got it right? He's whole. He's himself.
I remember playing with Daryl Flahave, and I love Flavs. He ended up being a goalkeeper coach at Palace. Flavs was loose. He was pretty loose, and he was small for a goalkeeper, but it was really good. Flavs
defenders
played with a lad at Southend. Another one during that good spell. Mark Warren. Mark was he was a senior pro, but he just didn't buy into any. He used to laugh at all of it. And he'd be going down the tunnel, going, "Am I picking up centre half?" Because he said, "No, I didn't look at the board. Just tell me who I'm picking up. Just give me him."
Brilliant
quality.
So,
time, mate. Did you respect that at the time? Do you think? Appreciate it more now?
Because he had great banter. But he genuinely, he was brilliant. He was loose. He's just like, it's all right. He just started laughing and
healthy disrespect.
He just wasn't. He just got off the train with it all.
Midfielders,
couple more.
Midfield. What talent? So many clubs. Keith Andrews was really good at Milton Keynes.
Yeah,
Keith was a really good player.
Early Ed Wingers.
Sammy Ainston. Who else? So many clubs. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like to see
you get in the car on the way home.
I've gone. I don't.
Just someone who just would train with the laces undone.
Someone loose, but with the right accountability.
Yeah. And I think right accountability as well, just a great lad.
Great lad.
You know what I mean? I think they're always synonymous, aren't they? I was thinking about Ben Smith. Obviously,
Kevin Mayer was really good at Southend. Yeah,
good player.
Kev was good.
How would that go up there, the dynamics of that when someone doesn't pass the ball into Bellas?
Keith would get angry. He'd be quickly angry at Bellas. Bellas would be going after him.
Them two would be having a fight.
Flavs would be chilled back there, just laughing at everyone.
Love it.
Brilliant, mate. Thanks so much, mate. Fascinating stuff.
Where can everyone find you? Socials and things.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
All on that.
He's
yeah.
all on it.
Fear Instagram. Coach. Sweat and Courage, yeah, Fear Coach. Thing. And if you want to listen to this, it's at In The Stiffs. And innerstiffs@gmail.com if you want to contact us with any questions.
Incredible.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Cheers.
Love that.
In The Stiffs with Budging Motors. Budging Motors are on Stafford Park in Telford and Featherbed Lane in Shrewsbury. For all your car needs, contact Budging now.